The requirements of the Open Public Meeting Law, PL 1975, Chapter 231, have been satisfied in that adequate notice of this meeting has been published in the Star Gazette and posted on the bulletin board at Borough Hall stating the time, place, and purpose of the meeting as required by law. Would you all please rise and join me in saluting our flag?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic which stands one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
We have a roll call, please.
Oliva.
Here.
Jewell.
Here.
Torres.
Here.
McDonald.
Here.
Valentine.
Here.
Boyle.
Here.
Higgins.
Here.
How are you? First up tonight, we have a presentation from PP&D Accounting Services. We have a Mr. Petroselli and a Mr. Morrison. Gentlemen, if you'd like to come up here and make your presentation to us. Welcome.
Thank you. Good evening, everybody.
Good evening.
Good morning.
Each one of you have a presentation in front of you. And I always joke with my students, but I always put a picture in whenever I'm lecturing on forensic accounting. And I ask you to look at that picture. Do you see the father or do you see the son?
Father.
How many people see the father?
Wait, wait a minute. Are you supposed to stare at this?
So do you see the father or do you see the son?
I see the mother.
You see the mother.
I see the dog taken away.
Well, if you see the father, it's the old man. If you look to the chin, you'll notice the son on this side. If you look at that, okay. If you look at the father and the father, this being the chin of the son, you'll see the young face of the son on the side. And kind of when we do a forensic audit, we don't look at things like black and white. We have to look at them differently than what your normal auditor does. Your normal auditor comes in, he has his standards, you know, he follows his pronounces, he tests transactions. We're a little bit different. We come in and we have to kind of figure out who's the potential person that has the opportunity and how does that opportunity arise. So when we define fraud from a forensic perspective, we talk about human ingenuity. Is there a human that has the possibility to circumvent the systems in place? To be surprised, most fraud is uncovered by tips. Everybody thinks the auditors go out there and the auditors are going to find the fraud. So most frauds are uncovered by tips. If I told you it was $2.9 trillion in fraud based on the last GDP numbers, 5% of annual revenues in every company is subject lost to fraud every year. That's the kind of numbers. So what we do is, again, I gave you a list. If you flip through the first page, was just a definition. I won't, you know, it tells us how we define the fraud. You know, we find it through tips. Do you have a hotline established to give people the opportunity to come and talk about it, to present fraud? The Whistleblower Act. People are afraid sometimes to talk about something that happens because they haven't been afforded immunity. If you have the proper Whistleblower Act in place, you get people to talk. So most of my time is spent trying to create communication. So we don't get right into the numbers. So when you first put out this proposal, and I was one of the people with Mr. Morrison, when we tried to bid it, it's such a broad range you're asking for. If you want to go through every transaction in this town, it's going to be an expensive audit. What I've done in the last couple of months is I've been part of a team that we've developed what we call fraud detection. We're learning that if you're going to do something like this, why not go from a more proactive perspective and find out, do you have opportunity for fraud to exist in your town? And I'm going to tell you, as you can see by the statistics on page 3, corruption is 32.4% of the frauds that have been found through the net throughout the country. They include kickbacks, vendor conflicts, family members. It can be from ghosting an employee where you have somebody on the payroll that's not doing the work. It could be from stealing sick time and violating, because under the law, the CFO is supposed to certify sick time and so forth. I can tell you, most towns don't do that. So if we go and we look at what am I doing as a forensic guy? I'm preparing, and counsel will tell you this, I'm preparing as if I'm going to testify in court. That's the big main difference between a forensic auditor and a regular auditor. A regular auditor's following is, his generally accepted, his yellow book standards. I'm thinking that what I'm doing is going to lead me down the path to go to court. So if you want to simply define, my audit is a legal direction. I need to know upfront that you're willing to take that step as an auditor. Because once I uncover it, I'm ethically bound. I no longer can say, gee, I'm sorry, I can't expose it. It happens in so many different places. It's amazing. The people that you least expect, from a grandma to a young person, it's amazing the types of frauds that come out. If you look, I kind of give you, under on page 5, I start to tell you, here's what we do if we're auditing generally, here's what we do if we're forensic. Obviously, when your auditor comes in, he's coming in, he's going to go right to the books and records, go and talk to your people. I'm going to use public records. I'm not going to let the people know if I'm suspecting them. If I go to you and I say, hey, I'm a forensic auditor, I'm going to be looking at you. No, no. I'm going to go and do all my background checks outside as much as I can. Because if I suspect somebody, I trigger them off by coming in. So we tend to use more review of public documents. How many people in this room have heard, I can guarantee you, do you ask for background checks on your people? Do you check their credit? Do you make sure they're bondable? Those are the types of things we look for. Why? It can happen, but if I have insurance, I don't have to worry about it because at least I'll get reimbursed. So what we try to do when we design it and when we do a forensic investigation, we try to look at it from a proactive perspective, that we're really coming in to try to tell you where your systems are failing, where the controls need to be strengthened up, and where the risk lies. That norm, that up until Sarbanes-Oxley took place, wasn't something the auditors never did. We never really got really involved in the internal controls. We kind of said management is responsible for internal controls and we'll accept it. In the last years now, we're being asked to assess it. So what to give you an idea of what a forensic auditor does, we develop what we call the 7-step forensic audit approach. The first step is we determine the backgrounds of the people we're dealing with. Are these people all capable? Because, I mean, you know, and you know what? They're not Einstein frauds. It's going to be something like the vendor's overcharging you. You're going to have an invoice. You're going to make a payment. But nobody measures it unless you get 3 competitive bids. Did they go out for a bid? You know, and so forth. So they're not usually sophisticated frauds. It's going to be misuse of a vehicle. Maybe they're using their vehicle for personal use. I gave you the sick time. Maybe they're covering each other. Do we have time clocks? There's technology now where you put your finger and you can download the information at the timesheets. You have to get into a deterrent. Coming in here and saying, I'm going to look for fraud, it's very difficult to prove fraud in a trial. Counsel will tell you the burden is very high on trying to prove fraud. So the second step, after we get the initial background, we start to interview it. And we rely on you appointing people that know the town, know the past histories, and we interview and we decide which people are best to interview. Obviously, the best people to interview are the directors, your managers, who is here past. You know, what do you feel is the weaknesses and controls that you're looking for? If you wanted this forensic audit, obviously people are concerned about something. They were concerned enough to put it on a referendum. My question would be, where do you want to focus? The more focused you make it, the cheaper the bill. The more broad you leave it, the more expensive the audit gets. The third one is what we call a genealogy analysis. We have, I put 2 types of it. One's a link metrics. What we do is we try to see the correlation of who's, where there's overlapping responsibilities, where someone could actually write the check, be involved with negotiating the contract, if there's a lack of controls in place. The next one is after we go through the initial interviewing process and we kind of get our feels, we brainstorm with a group of you people and whoever's involved or whoever, you know, wants to be involved, and we try to say, here's where the opportunities are. Here are some of the gaps in the controls. Here's what you have to look at to see where the fraud is going and the extent of how much you want to take this. We can use substantive testing. Those are the typical accounting type of testings, analytical testing, but you may require surveillance. You may require informants. You may require more detailed investigations. It's not only going to just be looking through the bills. It may go out into a more hands-on, where you're actually watching someone under surveillance. And the most important part of it is to develop necessary documentation so that you can. Remember, a forensic auditor or forensic accountant cannot say someone committed fraud. The only person that can say someone committed fraud is a judge and a jury. So I could find it, but until a jury convicts or a judge commits, I don't say anybody committed fraud. I say it looks like fraud, it smells like fraud, but that's a judge and a jury's decision to make at a later date. And then we obviously, like I said before, we go and we make sure that the testimony would substantiate and ultimately lead to a conviction. The first step in an evaluation is by CASO, that was the Committee on Sponsoring Organization that founded this whole idea now of risk management and internal control. And it goes through a five-step process, controlling. And if you notice, the biggest one that we find when people think there's fraud, most of the time it's just poor communication. Once people don't think they get information right away, it means people are committing fraud. So we find often that the more effective the communication is, it leads to more understanding of what's really going on. So you go through these various steps, and I won't belabor, and I also gave you like a typical approach. I'm not going to, you can go through it. We basically evaluate the fraud. We identify the risk. You know, we schedule, you know, what are the factors, and we go through these various steps. This is where we're in that communication step, where there's potential for overlap and so forth. So I wanted to just give you the broad stroke, and now I would ask Mr. Morrison, he'll come up. He's actually on the other side of the forensic side. He's actually someone that goes out and audits towns. So he can kind of, the two of us working together have kind of developed a great perspective, because he has the auditor's perspective and I have the other kind of like, no, that's not the, you know, the forensic side. So I think he can, you know, bring another level of it with the municipal side. So.
A couple of things. One of the reasons we partnered up on this proposal is because Joe's firm is cutting edge when it comes to the changing environment of fraud detection and prevention. And he knows government from other facets of his work, whereas my entire 35-year career has been involved with government, and we have become involved over the years in doing forensic engagements and fraud detection simply because fraud exists in government. We felt we blended nicely. Two or three quick points. First, Joe mentioned the need to focus the engagement if possible. We could look at 100% transactions in any given period of time and go through them all and determine whether or not things were done correctly, whether or not things were done incorrectly, whether it was intentional, whether it was unintentional, whether or not damages were done to the town. But it would be very expensive. It makes more sense from a cost-benefit perspective, which is the way government operates, to focus on areas where large dollar amounts are involved or large numbers of smaller transactions are involved that could be problematic. In the piece that I put together, which is the Q&A, I mentioned a couple of examples of a fraud that occurs in just about every town, just about every day. Mom takes home the marker for the kid, or the pad of paper for the kid, or dad is supposed to get a 15-minute break and he takes 20 minutes. Those are frauds. The taxpayers of the town where that person took that extra 5 minutes have been robbed of 5 minutes of service. Now, do we want to focus a fraud investigation, a forensic accounting engagement, on somebody taking a long break? No. But what we can do, and a byproduct of our engagement, would be a report that indicates where you have no written procedures, where you have no strong controls, and suggestions that would improve your oversight and your monitoring of your employees, the work they perform, the way they perform the work. So one of the benefits, even if no illegal acts are found, brought to a judge and jury, and someone is convicted, is that you would get a report on the way the town operates and suggestions as to where there are weaknesses in your controls and suggestions as to how to make improvements in your control environment to make sure, as Joe said, detection. An ounce of detection is worth a pound of cure, and you've heard that before, and that's the truth. if you make rules and you let people know that there are rules, there's less of a likelihood that they will involuntarily or unintentionally violate them. Fraud can be intentional or unintentional. A lot of financial statement fraud in municipal government is unintentional, and in fact, it's the result of CFOs who really are not competent. Right? They didn't do something wrong intentionally. What happened was they made mistakes or they didn't understand the laws or the regulations. We'll be looking for that, but that's not going to be a primary focus. You know, I know financial statements of government. With you know, I can put together a set of financial statements with my eyes closed. So one of the things we'll do is we'll go through your audits and we'll look to make sure that they're following the correct procedures. But that won't be the focus. Materiality is something that we will all need to talk about before we actually start any field work. Right. If we're going to not do the scattergun 100% approach, we're going to probably need to decide at what level of financial transactions do we want to focus. Right? Do we want to focus at bid threshold levels to make sure that you're complying with the law, make sure that there isn't any bid rigging scheme going on, or that the practices and procedures for publicly advertising, accepting, and opening bids and for that matter, quotes, which are often overlooked, is being followed to make sure that you're getting the best bang for your buck. I say that because, again, the cost of the forensic engagement will depend upon how narrowly we can focus. And we can focus on multiple years, specific types of transactions. We can focus on, you know, individual time periods, larger scope. Basically, it's pretty much what you think the best bang for your buck will be. I give a couple of examples of intentional fraud and the causes. Incentive. Incentive can be a lot of things. It could just be simply somebody thinking they're underpaid, somebody wanting a new car and not being able to afford it. It's as easy as that. So fraud can occur virtually anywhere. Pressures. I've been involved in at least a half a dozen fraud cases in my career where outright embezzlement has occurred because of financial pressures, be it a spouse with a gambling problem or a child, an adult child who's no longer covered on the health care, who got sick. Anytime money gets tight, the possibility of fraud is increased. And if you have an environment where fraud is possible, somebody's going to take advantage. The system will be gamed if you let the system be gamed. So the objective of the fraud engagement in part is to identify ways that the system can be gamed so that you can fix them. Finally, the last little cartoon or picture at the end pretty much says it all. Everybody is greedy. The question is, how greedy are they? Right? That's pretty much, we in the audit community, we say that slightly different. Everybody's got a number. What's their number? Because at some point in time, if the ability to unjustly enrich yourself to a certain level is great enough, the risk, the chance that you're going to get caught is worth it. So you have to figure out everybody's number. And pretty much that's what we'll intend to do here. And we look forward to it. And we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Morrison, let me ask you a question about forensic audits in general. Let me ask you a question about forensic audits in general. Do you always focus just on fraud detection, or is there other reasons? Like, supposing that we're interested in just locating money that could possibly be existing in some non-existing account or unknown account.
Mm-hmm.
That's also a possibility, right? I mean, I understand here that this is all focused on fraud detection, but that's not the only reason that forensic audit.
Oh, no, absolutely not.
Okay.
Right.
What are some of the other reasons then?
Well, you just mentioned one. Unrecorded assets. Unrecorded liabilities is another one. Oftentimes, especially in municipal government in New Jersey, because the standard for accrual is not what it is on the national level, you can have significant liabilities that you don't know about not showing up on your balance sheet. A couple of classic examples that could sink you are accumulated sick and vacation pay and the unreported cost of post-retirement benefits, right? I don't consider that to be a fraud. I consider that to be a weakness in New Jersey accounting. But one of the things we'll do when we go through your documents is make sure that it is properly disclosed so that the governing body, when making decisions going forward, will know what's out there. Because if you look at your current fund balance sheet and it says you have $1 million surplus, and then you have to go 50 pages back into your notes, and note 6 says, oh, by the way, you have a $2 million accumulated liability for sick and vacation pay, and 3 more pages beyond that, it says you've got a $5 million liability for the cost of post-retirement benefits. Well, that's $7 million of liabilities. You only have $1 million of surplus. In the real world, you have a $6 million deficit looming. Right? That's one of the things we could talk about.
I want to clear one thing up. What you're raising, that should come out of your normal audit.
Okay.
Undisclosed liabilities, undisclosed. Remember, that's where the separation becomes between forensic and your audit. What you brought up, if there's money that's not in your books, then that's an audit. What a forensic person is doing is he's identifying across the board where the problems are, like as far as making sure the credit, because a number is no good in a financial statement unless you believe the controls behind that number give it credibility. If you didn't have, if you're concerned about things like unrecorded liabilities or potential funds that are not in there, then you really need to look at your auditor. I'm not trying to pick on them, but then your auditor is responsible to ensure by testing because it's an attestation function. So things like cash or grants that or unaccumulated IDs, those are all actuary numbers that they should be asking for. And in your budget document, you actually are supposed to estimate the number of days, and they're supposed to give you an actuary number. So I don't want to give you the idea that it's still a forensic. A forensic is designed, someone believes that the township's controls are weak and that there's the ability for someone to perpetrate fraud. And I'm clearly telling you, it's not going to be easy to detect it. But what you want to do is you don't want to just go out and go on a witch hunt. If you're going to do this and put controls in place, systems in place that people would be deterred from doing it in the future. The problem in our accounting industry, and I battle with them all the time, is I'm brought in after the fraud's done and I put $2.7 million. If they would have brought us in ahead of time and I would have seen that the guy is duplicating, he would have never got away with that fraud because I would have immediately gone to your manager and say, listen, here's a potential problem. You better plug this hole because if you don't, you're going to have a problem. You don't want us coming in after the fact. You want to
exactly.
Make it. You, after the fact, it's too late. You know, I can tell you how to prevent and mitigate it by having insurances, making sure people are bonded, doing background checks. Those are all the things they're doing. So take this energy. If you're going to take the energy in a forensic way, turn it into a positive way that, hey, I hope at the end of the day there is no fraud. But at the end of the day, I develop systems to create more efficiency, alleviate duplication of duties, remove responsibilities that people are not doing properly. That's all going to come out. That's what we're doing.
Yeah.
We're interviewing each person, and by the end of the day, you're going to know what that person does.
We were audited by the state and the controller.
We've seen it, yes.
Right.
Yes.
And they came in, and if I'm not mistaken, their finding was that there was no fraud. So how is that different from their findings as to the findings that you would find?
Well, first of all, what the comptroller's office did is not a forensic engagement.
Okay.
They came in and did specified procedures. Basically, it looked like that they decided were important to them. Right? I've had clients who have been subjected to the comptroller's office's audits, and they are very thorough. I mean, they put people out there for long periods of time, and they spend a lot more money than you could afford to spend if you had to pay for it. But they have specific areas that they're focusing on, and their reports don't tell you how they arrived at those focal points. Right? We will be working with you to arrive at whatever focal points we decide to choose. And one of the things that, I mean, if you look at the comptroller's report, and then you look at the recommendations in the last 3 regular financial audits that you have, you see some items that should be somewhat concerning to you, right? You see recommendations regarding the borough's ability to put together bid specs so that you can do competitive bidding, right? That's problematic, because in the absence of competitive bidding, you're opening up a can of worms that you may not want to open up. That would be one of the things that we would suggest we focus on. It'd be up to the mayor and council, or the committee of the mayor and council and the administration, whoever is designated to work on this, to work with us to develop the scope of the project. This is not something we're going to come in and tell you how we're going to do it. We're going to sit down and we're going to say, here's what we see as our concerns right off the bat. We think this is an area where we should concern ourselves. Here's the other procedures we'd like to perform up front, be it interviews, be it reviews of full audit documents, being reviews of minute records, to identify other areas that might be of concern to us. And again, I have the expertise of knowing municipal government from very large to very small. Joe has the expertise in fraud detection and audit technique. And between the two of us, with our joint expertise, we feel comfortable that we will be able to give you a fairly comprehensive report and based on whatever scope we agree to.
Okay. Mr. Boyle, you had a question?
Yeah, thank you. Gentlemen, one of the original concerns we had with a forensic audit is that we wouldn't be redundant on a normal audit, and you had mentioned some of those things tonight. If you know the debt of a municipality, and you can see how that municipality looks as you're driving in here, and the understanding of our requests, can you just, by the debt alone, determine that there were some things that weren't quite done properly?
See, you're going in a direction, you're thinking like a traditional audit. Okay, I'll give you the World Cup. Well, I'll give you an example.
Yeah, but here's where I guess I'll just jump to the thing. I keep hearing the word fraud, all right? That's not going to change the fact, because we're looking at what the past practices were, okay? You know, what was requested was going backwards, and you said, well, you can't go backwards. You want to do a preventative maintenance type of audit so we don't continue the practices. Now, the comptroller's report, which you had looked at, showed some of those things that we had to do and the recommendations that we didn't implement, and, you know, currently that's what's being taken place. We don't want redundancies, and I don't want to sit here and see another report that says in different languages what our internal audit and then our comptroller's audit, and we have this forensic. What we're looking for is if there was stupidity, mismanagement, things of that nature. You had mentioned about interviewing people from that particular time period. Now, some of these people are private citizens. How do you propose bringing private citizens in to ask?
Well, if they were part of your record keep, if they're part of the generation of your records, I mean, you could always go back and interview people for the information that they were involved in preparing. Again, that's why I wanted to be clear. We're not here to accuse people of fraud. I'm telling you, the understanding of a forensic audit, the reason I'm using the word fraud is because that's what my forensic auditing to me is people. You're exactly right. You have an auditor. You had a state come in here and look at your numerical aspects. We're people person. We're going to come in here and tell you the people, because people commit the frauds. So the design is your systems or your people working to be the most efficient they can be, or are they making mistakes? You have a function of your payroll where they're saying that your payroll is not reconciled. I think it was in the audit recommendation,
yes.
Wasn't it? Payroll is 70-80% of your item.
But you're looking at current practices now.
Right. Correct.
I don't believe the intent of what we were looking for. Now your company probably can provide that, is what had taken place 5 years ago, 6 years ago, that got us to this point, and how we don't, it might dovetail on what you're saying, so we don't repeat these particular items.
Well, I mean, you were talking about debt. I give you, without having spent a moment looking at how the ordinances were presented, how they were passed, whether or not the impacts were presented, I'll tell you right now, when a town finds itself in an untenable position with respect to debt, the first thing you do is you pass an ordinance saying, we want a financial impact statement accompanying every audit requesting the authorization of debt henceforth and forevermore. And
And what does that mean? It means how much are we going to, how much are you asking us to authorize in borrowing using current interest rates and the useful life of that ordinance? How many years is it going to take for us to pay this off? How do you plan on paying it off? Are we going to do it, pay off notes over a 10-year period? We're going to do bonds over a 20-year period so that you know before you vote yes on that ordinance what it's going to do to you going forward. Because what most towns in this state are finding, and maybe more in the last 5 years than previously, is that dollars are very limited, and you can't say yes to every bond ordinance that's brought forward. So is it a road? Is it a park? Is it a roof? Is it something else? You need to know. And the capital budget process each year, where you lay out the capital budget, your requests, that is a point where the governing body should either have it built into an ordinance in your code book or demand it as part of the budget review process. Don't tell us what you want to do now. Tell us what it's going to cost us later, too. So this way, $1 million a year for roads is a wonderful thing, but if you're bonding $1 million a year and it's accumulating, well, you know, 5 years ago, if you borrowed money for 20 years at 5%,
right,
it cost you 50 cents on
more.
The buck.
My final question here is, you understand the form of government the Borough of Washington has, and with any municipality's form of government, would that be an indication of, okay, we know the deficiencies of this particular type of form of government, and that's where we would look. You understand what I'm saying? I mean, because every form of government, type of government has its what you can and can't do.
Sure.
Right.
But there is always a way to improve controls, whether it's at the departmental level, at the administration level, or whether the governing body has to become more involved in the oversight function. There's always a way you can improve control.
I'm going to give you an example. I work on the finance committee in Edison as a civilian because I try to help the town with the budgets. The mayor and the council are totally at odds. It's a forked form of government. Okay? Trying to get the two sides to get together is like sometimes almost impossible. The council is responsible for the controls. The council is responsible for the budget. Okay? What I'm trying to show them is that you have to have the controls in place because it becomes an issue of trust. I think if we're talking whatever form of government, one side's going one way, one side's going the other way. And I give you the big word, communication. It's a lack of communication. I think at the end of the day, everybody wants to get to the same point. It's just some people have a different way of getting there.
Right.
What you try to do whenever you're at a forensic investigation, first of all, people, as soon as I walk in the room, they're scared. And I calm them down right away. I say, listen, I'm not here to put you in jail. I'm not here to accuse you of anything. I'm here to get answers and try to, hopefully, you're going to be my partner and help me. Because you can usually tell in the first 5 seconds if someone's lying to you after doing it after a while. But most people are not here. In Bible study, a lot of times, people are not trained. I can guarantee you people like the CFOs, some of them can't even put financials together. And they were grandfathered in under the old laws. So this design is not an attacking format. I don't want to give you any impression that we're coming in here, rolling up our sleeves, and we're going to get people and start putting people in jail. It's more of a helping environment. We're here to try to get more effective communication, get you guys, and you can talk to any one of my council members that I sit on that finance committee, and he'll tell you, I teach them. My council members understand the budget, and you guys need to understand what we're trying to do and carve it out, because the more you carve it out and direct, because you need to direct us. If there is that, if you see that dichotomy of the government not working, and you think that we can come in and focus controls or communication effective to get more communication and clean that up, well, that's what this is about. This is not, he's trying to get this guy. And it doesn't work that way. It's communication, seeing the people. And you may not like it. I may go, and no, Rich, I'm not picking on you. I may say to you, you know what, I spoke to Rich, he's not the right guy. No offense. That's what a forensic guy's going to do. I have to say, here's what's going on. Here, guy, here's your facts about what they're doing. You're the judge and the jury. You can decide whether or not you think he's okay or not. My job is merely to say, here's what he's doing. Here's what I don't think he's doing well. Here's where I think he needs to be better. I'm not going to go up and say, he's the worst guy in the world. That's your job. My job is to be a fact finder. like I do whenever a judge appoints me a receiver or appoints me to do a fraud investigation. I don't go in there like the cavalry ready to kill people. I go in there and say, listen, I'm here to find out what the facts are, because I cannot convict. I am not the judge. I'm not the jury. So I think that's a great point. If there is, and that's hopefully by the end of the day, when you go through this process, you get more effective communication. Because I can tell you, as soon as people in the public and in our town, they're not giving us the documents. They just said the health care was going to save $4 million. And I sit on the finance committee. Okay? Well, if you're saving $4 million, that's pretty easy, right, Rich? Give me the proposal, show me the numbers, and show me how we're saving $4 million. Pretty easy, right? Don't give it to us. So what do? They go to the website and say the council is now responsible for layoffs. And that's what happens. But we don't see that. We're black and white. We're going to just give you the black and white fact. Here's the health care cost. Here's the real numbers. Here's what it looks like. And I move and I step aside. And then it's up to you to decide. But I can tell you, if you don't think about the design of whatever you're trying to do, it can go like this. If you want to keep it like this and a reasonable number, then you have to design it. Whatever you feel. And you guys are the only one that know your town. And you need to know, you need to know whatever the comfortability is that you're trying to achieve.
Yes, believe me, you had a question.
Yeah, I've just a couple of quick questions. What if you keep kind of more focusing on the current situation, and in like the last 2 years, we basically have an entirely different council, a new CFO, a new manager. What happens if you detect something back from, say, 2006 or 2005? That's where I'm getting lost.
The statute of limitation on fraud is when it's discovered, but up to 6 years, you can go back and bring a fraudulent action in a court of law. So when I say going forward, I'm saying...
Like what if the practices now are okay, but it was a bad practice back then? What exactly are we accomplishing here?
I think you're giving me the wrong message. What I was trying to do is we're going to go back and look. But rather than just look for fraud, I'm also saying try to come up at when you get to the front, mm-hmm. that we wound up designing a system that's going to help you go forward. Absolutely going back the 5 years, testing the transactions, looking at the debt. But what I don't want to do is make it just based on the back and we wind up coming up empty and not having given you something
right.
going forward.
So say you do detect fraud, let's say whatever year, it's my impression, and then it goes over to the prosecutor. What at the end of the day, though, then what? They pick up the tab, and at the every end of the day, you're still going to give us these new controls and recommendations even after... How does that work?
That would be the plan,
oh,
yes.
Yeah.
And to the extent that something may not have been working properly, and as a whole you don't suspect illegal acts, and you're satisfied that the fix has been put in and it's been corrected, that might be something that we don't need to go over because we don't need to be redundant. If it showed up in the comptroller's audit, the comptroller has come back in and done a second report, and he said this is an area that we are essentially satisfied it's been cleaned up. We'll take a look to make sure that it's still functioning the way it was when he came back in, but unless you say we really think something was fishy going back to 2005 or 2004 in that area, that's an area that we may not want to include in the scope simply to save on the costs.
Typically, could you recommend, like, how far back do you go for forensic audits? How many years? I guess, like, within 6 years, since that's the statute of limitations?
I usually like to go back, around five.
Because
the statute's six.
And what's usually the actual fraud that you have found in municipalities? Besides, like,
it's
taken home the paper.
I can't tell you where they were, but, I mean, I've had managers take $1 million of cash and put in an annuity for an insurance person that they got kickbacks for the commission because an annuity contract, which a township has, Rich will tell you, can't invest in anything more than 397 days, to people messing around with dog licenses, where people have pre-numbered dog licenses and take the money for a dog license, and, you know, if you don't have pre-number, I mean, it's so big, I mean, to vendor. Most of it is, a lot of the ones that scare me the most are in the construction contracts, when you see a lot of change orders. You know, like it says, the guy comes in on an emergent basis because the sewer broke.
Yep.
And they don't competitively bid it. And all of a sudden it's like,
Some, oh yeah, we'll come in for $55,000. Next thing you know, it's $800,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it ranges.
And that's by the way, that's an example of one that we actually have had in the last couple of years. There was a $6+ million sewer repair project that not a single bid, not a single quote, and the guy who was awarding the contract was also monitoring performance. No controls. And not a single resolution brought to the governing body.
Do you have any examples? I know you can't mention any municipalities in the area, but if we're willing to invest the money in your firm to actually perform this audit, what type of positive impacts have those municipalities have made, or progress have they made since then? Because, you know, we're looking at the same type of thing where you
sure.
mentioned about professionals. That's a big chunk, I think, down what happened
oh, yeah.
in the past.
Again, the best byproduct, other than knowing that either there was nothing intentionally done wrong, and or if there was something intentionally done wrong, that it's been moved up the food chain in the legal process, is the report on control weaknesses and improvements. What you get in a statutory audit, right, when your auditor comes in, he's taking a look at your controls not to tell you whether or not your controls are working. You look at the auditor's report, it says, we are not expressing an opinion on controls. We're looking at the controls to see if they seem reasonable, and then we're going on with our audit. We're going to do a little bit more than that. We're going to look beyond the controls to the transactions in areas that we focus on, and if we come across a control that isn't barring the door, right, isn't limiting the potential for somebody to game you and cost your taxpayers money, we're going to come in with recommendations, very specific recommendations.
So in essence, I'm kind of getting the idea that this is more of a preventative maintenance, and if you do find something criminal,
well,
to say,
that's
a plus.
That's why the proposal was put together
okay.
the way it was.
Okay.
It's not only looking for
right.
for historical fraud,
right.
it's also to give you a document that will help prevent future fraud.
And given the environment, if you don't find a major fraud, to try to get the FBI or some agency interested in your fraud, I mean, I've had stuff that we've given to them and nothing, you know. So I think having done this a long time now, just to go in on a witch hunt or give the impression of a witch hunt rather than this council trying to be proactive, in my opinion, is wrong. We're going to go back. It's like the fraud is there. If you ask me, I'm going to tell you right now, if I look hard enough, I can say someone didn't do this. And technically, it's a fraud. So it depends on how you know, where you're looking. I think it's you get more bang for your buck if you look at it on a global perspective than you do if you're just specifically targeting fraud. And counsel, how hard is it? I mean, I testify on them all the time. How hard is it to get someone convicted of fraud? Almost got to catch the guy in the act. So I'm not going to sell you a bag of goods that even if I did find him, we're going to get a conviction. Because it's like amazing. What the burden is, it's remember, there's the civil with the scale, and then when you go to criminal, it's beyond a reasonable doubt. So somebody comes up and says, you know, you have the one lady that just ripped off $1 million who did it because she has a sick mother. And you got the jurors over there standing over there, she's crying. I mean, she still stole $1 million. You know, but it's like that, and you look there and you're like, oh my God, it's $1 million, you know. So I think I wanted to give you the perspective that I think you'll get more because I think the public wants better communication in the numbers. They don't seem to have a comfortability in the numbers. I mean, why else would you want to do a forensic? You had your state auditor in here. You have your auditor in here. Those are all valid points, councilman, as you brought up, that you're doing not to duplicate, and it isn't a duplication. It's to say, here's, and I think at the end of the day, I don't think you've ever seen a forensic report. We actually go through the people because it's about people. Here's the function of a borough manager, and here's really the risk. Here's what the potential fraud. If you want to know what this man fraud can do, here's the only potential for his fraud. Guess why he can't do it? Because you got this, and you got that. And I think once people see that, there's more comfortability because you'll have more comfortability in the numbers you're relying on. Because I can tell you, an audit don't mean nothing if there's nobody checking and putting the controls. Wear that check. Wear that independent look.
If you look at the major functions that you perform, payroll, right? Who's putting the new hires onto the system?
Are they also the people who are putting the time and attendance into the system? Are they also the people who are putting in the pay rates? Are they also the people processing the checks, handing out the checks, reconciling the bank account, and charging the operating budget, right? If a transaction like payroll is controlled from start to finish by a single person, there's an opportunity. Now, in a small town, it may be the only cost-effective way to process payroll, but there are controls that can be put into place. So when we look at the payroll function and we say, well, we have some weaknesses in your controls. How do we fix them? We bring people who are not involved in the process in as overseers. Somebody has to sign off on the payrolls besides that person. Somebody has, you know, whether it be copies of payrolls to council periodically. I mean, there's lots of ways you can do it. Controls over the salary ordinances, right? Right? Make sure that everybody, you know, periodically you perform a test to make sure that everybody has a title in the salary ordinance or they're a member of a collective bargaining unit, that type of thing.
If you bring in overseers, an overseer, is that something that's also an additional cost?
Well, an overseer could be somebody else in the administration who is just otherwise not involved.
I see.
Right? For example, if your borough manager is not involved at all in the payroll process right now, and and there is just one person involved in the entire HR and payroll process, well, guess what? We may be recommending Mr. Phelan has a second job. we may want him to look over and sign off certified payrolls to make sure that you don't end up with a ghost employee on the payroll system.
The other question I have is something you brought up earlier, and I'm wondering how we do this. You were talking about you have to decide what direction you want this to go in. How do you actually decide that direction, again, to make it the most efficient as possible?
Okay, you're a councilman. Okay, if you wanted to know something about this town,
mm-hmm.
what would it be?
Okay.
Think like that. It's not, again, it's simple. You don't need to make this as hard. Like, we're going to do, you have software, ACL, data mining software, you know, that we use, and we go in and you run all your people and you look for, is a brother and a brother, a vendor, you look for all that. That's all the typical friendly stuff. But what's more important is, where is the communications lacking? That's what I do, because that's in the communication. The guy's doing all the payroll, and he's not communicating that there is a comfortability in that. It really boils down to, think about what would you feel comfortable knowing was mm-hmm. in place so that you would say that payroll is accurate.
Okay, so would this be something that we would do as a council before we go out to interview anybody, or when we find somebody to do it, say, sit together with them and brainstorm about doing it?
If, based on the history of what I see, I would open it up and say, what are you looking for? I mean, you obviously had 80% of your population want a forensic. What's their reasoning for it? They obviously have concerns. I would hold a meeting and ask, you know, what could we do? You know, what are you looking for? Because the more you can define that,
mm-hmm.
the less costly it is. I mean, these
right.
things get, I mean, the reason people don't do it, council, the thing to council and say, the reason people don't do this is because it's too expensive, because
right, yeah.
everybody wants the whole, there's obviously some concern here. I don't know what it is, and I'm sure it's probably not significant.
Well, I
know you had the garage. I think I read somewhere.
The fact that we have so much debt.
Yeah.
So that,
if I may, Mr. Petrosilla, you actually made a good segue to what I would want to do here. One of the people in the audience, or a couple of people in the audience, but one in particular, he and I had a conversation in particular about what he wants, and that's Mr. Del Elba there. And Mr. Del Elba, would you be so kind as to just tell these gentlemen what it was that
Mayor,
in particular
we had a question.
I'm sorry. What exactly it was that the citizens group was looking for, and what you told me, you know, when we were talking?
We were having a brief discussion a little previous about, before they got up and spoke about what some of the feedback was from the general population. And, well, you bring up some points. Garage was brought up. Sewer was brought up. Bids that went from, you know, 70,000 to 300,000 on issues, engineer fees. Things that just rose exorbitantly and way out of proportion without controls that jumped so dramatically. Not interested in the nitpicking stuff. Now, some of the population is very, very much interested in digging back because they do believe that fraud was an issue. Some of the population is very interested in the current control, what and how we are running the government now, so that we don't get into future problems. So there's some diversity, but I think it would be beneficial that if the council decides to go ahead, when they do decide to go ahead, not if, obviously it's mandated at this point, that maybe there'd be some input from, and very willingly from, some of those citizens that were involved. And that may be a little bit more focused. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I believe so. I just wanted you to clarify, you know, in particular what it was that your group had discussed.
See, I'm trying to just, and Rich knows it, I've been telling him since the day this first came out, I'm trying to steer you into less money. I could just keep quiet, let you bid it out. Everybody out there is going to come in $100,000, $150,000 because it's so global. I'm trying to just educate you enough tonight, hopefully, that you can narrow your focus. And I think by getting the community sentiment,
right.
Now if you're telling us it's debt, that is pretty easy. I mean, you can go back historically, pull all your bonding and figure out what it went to, pull those contracts. I mean, that's a routine, and, you know, look for conflicts.
So
and
debt and over expenditures is what I heard in particular.
Yeah. I mean, that kind of stuff is not...
The other?
Mr. Higgins, you had a question?
Well, yeah, real briefly. Three years ago, we changed our auditing system. We went from First Bite, I believe it was, to the Edmunds system. Now, there's things built into the Edmunds system that, as Councilwoman Gleba said, have changed for currently. How do we go back and retrieve the information from the computers before the admin system?
Everything you're going to do in forensic, and people can manipulate computers, and less than 1% is ever, computer helps you less than 1% of the time, and fraud. So if you're looking to do a forensic, you're going back to those actual bonding documents, those actual contract documents, the actual invoices. You're going to go to the source documents, because if someone was perpetrating a fraud, they're going to do it outside your computer system. So you're going to answer your question, if the focus is on bonds and, and misappropriations for capital improvements, you're going to actually physically have to grab those contracts, grab those requisitions, see who signed it, build the charts, and then start going back. You'll use the computer as a base to give you numbers, but you're really going to go and test those, because every fraud is outside the system. Let's face it, they're not going to put it in the computer. If someone was doing it, it's going to be outside your system. And then what you do is you'll start looking and say, well, this seems excessive, and you'll go to your construction expert and say, hey, you know, I've been doing construction in my career for 20 years. This seems to be high. And you'll go through it and start to test the transactions. But to rely completely on whether it's First Bite or Edmunds, I hate to say, it's like you get sometimes 500,000 documents in these cases.
And we
can't rely on the computer.
And we may not be able to get to a live computer file, but the... records retention laws require you to have appropriations ledgers and all your purchase orders and all that stuff. They're still on file from 5 years ago.
What if they weren't done?
Well, if they weren't done?
General ledger, for example.
Then, if you didn't have a general ledger is a summary document.
Okay.
Absent a general ledger, I'm going straight to the appropriations records if I'm worried about costs. I'm going to my computer runs for my capital projects. I'm going to my purchase orders for my capital projects. And if I don't find them, then we have a violation of law that we have to deal with.
Okay, is that a violation of law or just bad accounting practices?
It's a violation of law because there's a Records Retention Act that says purchase orders, I forget if it's 5 or 7 years, but there is a retention period, and you have to file with the state library and get an approval before you can destroy any of those records. So there should be a little yellow copy of a document that says, we got an approval to destroy stuff before it got destroyed.
Okay, another question. Just to follow up on Councilwoman Gleba's question about, you find some improprieties that you need to turn over to an investigative organization. Do you continue on with what parameters we set, or do you stop completely?
No, we keep going.
You go to the investigating authority and you go, listen, we found this right here, you might want to check this out.
Here's a package, here's a little document, smells like fraud, stinks like fraud, you're the judge and jury, you figure it out.
Okay.
Because now I save you money because they're going to get their investigators and it's not going to be on our dime anymore.
But you
why am I going to incur the expense?
Yes, we'll continue on what we were doing.
What we're going to do. Okay. I'm going to pass it on because let them get it prosecuted, let them pay for it.
Okay.
My job is done. I'm not gonna stay with it. I'm eventually gonna want to be subpoenaed, testify.
Is there anyone, once you make that determination and hand it over, is there anyone in the municipality that gains that information that you turn something over?
That'll be decided on by the council. You would probably have your town council would probably be our focal point, because there's a thing called a Cobell privilege. We would probably want him to communicate through him to you, so that if I did discover an impropriety, I'd take counsel here, and then he can go to you, because if I tell you directly, you now become a witness. So what you try to do is design it through the attorney-client privilege, so any communication would be like directed through your counsel to you. So if I went to Councilman, here's a document, look, we got the smoking gun, he's now going to get subpoenaed. I said, did you speak to Joe Petrosano on such and such a date? What did he tell you? So we try to shield you guys by doing it through the proper channels, and I think you streamline it. So you might have you keep it very careful, because last thing I want to do is bring you there just to say, well, what were your involvement, you know. I've done it a few times, Council, as you can see.
Mr. Torres, you have something else?
I do. Just a couple brief questions, and it has to do with, the actual money that we're going to be spending. In your estimation, how long does, a forensic audit, like what we may be doing from your experience, take? Is it months? Is it year? I mean, what are we talking here, time-wise?
We get back to the scope of the job, right?
Okay.
I mean, the original proposal that was sent out had us doing 100% of the transactions for at least one fiscal period. That is a 3 to 4 month, 3 to 4 person job, and that's a fairly expensive proposition. The cost and the time will be a product of the discussions and the determination of the scope.
So I'm familiar with business audits, forensic audits, and they deal more with inventories and things like that, transactions, and that would be focused.
Right.
So to me, it would appear that the governmental audit would, if it's say concentrated on say bid contracts and things of that nature. For instance, it would be way less time-consuming and less costly to the municipality, right?
Sure.
Okay.
Absolutely. If I don't have to look at every dog license that you issued,
and
I can focus on 15 or 20 construction contracts over 3 or 4 year periods, I'm a heck of a lot more efficient with my time and your money.
Okay. So then, say that was for the example that we were focused on. Say we all agreed and reached on that particular conclusion that that's what we wanted to focus on, just for say a 2 year time period, say back 5 years, whatever. Okay, how long would that take, and how much approximately? Just an estimate about, how much are we talking about in money?
Again, you would have to look at the number of transactions. Are we looking at 50 transactions? Are we looking at 200 transactions? Are we looking at 1,000 transactions? We have to sit down and.
Well, say for example, 1,000 transactions.
1,000 transactions. Okay.
What size?
Yeah. And,
are they 10 million contracts?
Did every one require an approval, or is it 50 payments on one contract 20 times?
Say any ones that are over the,
bid threshold.
Yeah, what is the
okay.
number for that? Yeah.
Okay. So I mean,
right.
if you take a contract that's over the bid threshold
for
a construction project,
that's
one contract. There may be, depending on how long it took to get the work done, there may be 25 or 30 transactions involved in that single contract. Payments. There should be engineers' estimates that go with these requests for payments that we're going to have to look at. We're going to be matching them up with the original bid documents. We're going to be looking for change orders.
And talking to people, as you mentioned.
Oh,
so all that considered, just a ballpark.
I can't do it. we have to look at the numbers. I can tell you that this is not something that we are inefficient at.
Mm-hmm.
We know what we're looking for. Before anybody looks at a transaction, there will be specific attributes that have been identified that have to be identified in the transaction and either checked off yes or brought back to the list of problem children that we will do more work on. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the other thing, right? Every time we find something that's not right, the time involved to fully resolve that issue could be 5 minutes, could be 5 hours.
Especially just saying some of the people ain't even here.
Well, and if there are documents missing, right? I mean, if all of a sudden we're looking at a transaction for a construction contract and the engineer's estimate now has, six line items that are over the original bid spec, and we don't see a change order approved by the governing body, well, either somebody forgot to put a change order in front of the governing body, or something's up here. That transaction gets pulled, and then we have to sit and figure out what happened. We're going to have to go talk to people about it. We may have to call people who aren't physically in this building now. And depending on, you know, the sniff test, it may end up on the pile for the prosecutor.
Counsel, and if you're concerned, then I would suggest make a budget. Devise it, come up with a budgetary number, and people can tell you based on that budgetary number, this is the amount of time. Yeah, it's really a function of
and progress reports out of
sure.
the firm. And you need that.
So when you make your bid, though, it's like a lump retainer amount plus hourly. How do you do it?
Go ahead.
The ideal way for a contract to be structured here would be to first work with the firm to identify the preliminary scope of the project, right? Recognize that depending on what gets found, things could get broader in scope, or if nothing is found, you may say, well, if you're not finding anything here, let's skip this, move on to something else, right? So the scope can change, but you have to set up some kind of a scope.
Parameters, right.
Right, and that was the problem with the first bid from our perspective, the first request, because it was such a sweeping engagement. I mean, we actually spent down and we said, you know, we're trying to figure out how many transactions. I mean, we drove your manager crazy. How many tax transactions are? How many purchase orders do you issue? How many checks do you issue? And we're sitting down and we're saying, all right, 5 minutes of transaction on a check, 2 minutes of transaction on a dog license, you know. And we're saying, okay, we're up to a year and a half of man time. You know, okay, how much are we charging? What level person do we have to bring in to do that? And quite honestly, you know, it was an exercise similar to trying to count the number of angels sitting on the head of a pin, because ultimately we're going to come out, we're going to find out that A, it wasn't going to take 5 minutes because the records were bad, it was going to take 10 minutes, or the records are terrific, it's only going to take 2 minutes.
So in essence, the more focused we get, then the quicker and easier it is for you guys to come up with an exact bid price. And then that would
And part of the solution would be to require the firm to produce
reports
weekly, monthly, however often you deem necessary, reports, so you can track the progress on the contract. What has been done, how much time was spent, what's it costing?
Yeah, I mean, you have to have milestones. You have to set milestones. And what I would do, if it was me in this situation, looking at it from your perspective, is you need to almost like have phases. You do phase one. Phase one is to get an overall idea of here's all the opportunities,
right.
You kind of, here's your smorgasbord of
choices.
Right.
Yeah.
You want to go this way,
yeah.
You feel this is duplication, don't go that way. But to give you like at least an opportunity to see what it is. But to make it real broad, you're gonna keep getting people that are afraid to come up. And if anybody comes in lower, they're not gonna get weekly reports, and they're gonna put one guy out here. To me, the faster you do it, the better. The longer you take at it, it'll drag on forever and ever and ever. I think you kind of want to get a perspective of, let's get in, figure it out, get it done, and move on. Or else it could, 2 years later, you'll be talking about the same thing.
Anything else? Gentlemen, thank you very much for coming.
Quick question, Mayor, if I can. Gentlemen, would it be helpful for whatever group is putting together the specifications to have professional advice from somebody knowledgeable like you guys are in terms of what should be included and how the specifications should be drawn? Because obviously folks here don't have the expertise you do, and obviously drawing up the specs is going to be very important in terms of the scope, the depth, and the time effort that's going to be required. How would they go about drawing up those specs?
You'd have to
The problem we have, we'd volunteer to write the spec for you, except then we'd be precluded from
correcting
the right. And we're much more interested in performing the engagement than drafting up the spec for somebody else.
Fair point.
But
how do they get that done? I mean, it requires a certain level of expertise.
It does, or you can just set out a process that is acceptable to the administration and the governing body for cost control.
In other words, there would be no set price. or just an upset price?
I would have a max price and say, I would give like, I would, again, bring in the public involved, I would define the scope. And
how does the public know exactly what areas that they should...
No, but I'm saying, but apparently debt is a concern. So, I mean, when I say, I'm talking general areas, I'm not talking to specific.
Okay.
So if they feel debt and the capital is an issue, mm-hmm. certainly as a council, you want to respect the voice of your community. So if I don't mean the specifics, I'm talking like, or they say the garage. I mean, I'll get people like in my town say, Joe, can you go look at the animal control? It's a $12,000 line item in our budget. And they want me to do a forensic audit on it, you know. So you kind of got to give them a perspective that, you know, $12,000 line item is probably not going to be your best choice of spending the taxpayers' money. But I would have them voice where their concerns are. You want to do some kind of a consulting thing. I mean, you know.
In other words, you're going to get a consultant to help
you oversee the process.
Because
it can go. I've seen forensic audits go. Somebody thought it was going to be $100,000, turn it to $2 million. I'm not on a government level, but on a private level, because it just as you went, it was just like you found a fraud here. I mean, we found five frauds. So it's like when you start out, you're like, oh, this is only going to be this, and then it turns into being, you think it's like $50,000, it turns into $2.7 million.
And I got to tell you, the last thing in the world somebody coming in to do a forensic engagement wants to have happen to them is to be lumped in the same category as the contractors that they came in to perform the audit. So that's why I'm saying you can design a request for a proposal. You can design a request for qualifications, but until the people actually are on site with some generalized scope of work to be performed and digging into the records, talking to people and seeing what they find, you're never going to know what the ultimate time requirement is. It's like performing surgery. You go in, you think it's going to be a half an hour surgery, and something happens and it becomes a 3-hour surgery.
But just to your comment, though, with the example where it was a, you know, we thought it would be $100,000 and then turned into $2 million because it was 1-4 turned into 5-4. At that point, though, isn't the expense wouldn't be on us? The expense would now be on the prosecutor.
No, this was a multinational company, and it started breaking down into big controls. So then they wanted to revamp. It turned out to be coming from going from a fraud investigation into where we were like putting in controls. It was that bad. It just blew up into this major. Mm-hmm. It was unexpected. I never expected a company like this to have this many weaknesses. And it was just like, you know, I was blown away. In your situation, it's going to be like, here, prosecutor, take it over. Most companies don't like to say they had a fraud in them, so you don't even hear about all the frauds. Like you hear about WorldCom, Tyco, Bernie Madoff, but most companies are so embarrassed by it that they won't even talk about it.
Basically,
so they won't let us go to, like, the prosecutor. They'll keep it in-house, and they'd rather pay somebody like us to stay there and do it just so it doesn't get out, because then all their investors might get, you know, concerned.
And depending upon the level of expertise at the law enforcement agency that the case would be brought to, whether or not they have experts in white-collar crime, we may get a request, and, of course, would be coming back to the governing body if we did get such a request. But a prosecutor might request that we continue to perform the services to develop the case simply because they don't have in-house expertise. I don't know.
But then the prosecutor would pay for it.
Sure.
But again, I ain't doing any work until you tell me.
Okay.
I'm going to go back to you and say, do you want me to continue working on this?
Here's the bottom line. If we give a not-to-exceed contract and we point out where the areas that we're looking at, you're going to get to that area, we're going to say, listen, we either found something, we haven't found something, and you're running out of money.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then we have to make a decision.
Yes, exactly. And we can work down with the priority.
That's the way I would approach. I wouldn't go as one big global council because it's too broad. Mm-hmm. I would maybe take baby steps, like do phase one, which is a preliminary analysis that council is suggesting that you're not duplicating. And then after you get that bag of goods, you decide if you want to go to the next step because it's too broad. The first one go around, and I drove Rich crazy. I said, Rich, how many transactions? What's the records like? Am I going to be able to pull data down? And he his guess is as good as mine. So,
but this could be done over a period of time, though. So we wouldn't take the hit all in one budget year.
If that's the way you wanted to phase it, it could be done that way.
Okay,
Right, I mean, you know, the nice thing about this work is that we can be as fast as you want us to be or as slow as you want us to be.
Remembering that there's the 6-year statute of limitations.
I understand that. Yeah.
Right. So we would have to have that work
first.
From the back, yeah.
Right.
Then you would go back old first and then forward.
Right. Okay.
Well, thank you very much.
No problem. My pleasure.
Thank you. Next up on our agenda, we have the minutes of the meeting of December 21st, 2010.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion?
Mayor, I believe on the minutes of January 4th, second page.
We're doing the December 21st right now.
Oh, I just heard minutes. I apologize.
Because I have one on the December 21st. On the second page, in the paragraph starting regarding Mr. Bond's letter, Mr. Higgins, perhaps you could clarify this, the statement. Councilman Higgins asked if the stated at contacted, is that supposed to be the state contacted?
The state. Right, correct. The state.
Okay. And, okay, any other discussion on the minutes of December 21st? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Minutes of January 4th.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion on this one?
Got two corrections.
I hope you have one at least. Deputy Mayor Jewell.
One was the vouchers. I do abstain from the rescue squad as well as fire department for both of the organizations.
Okay.
And
we pay rescue squad.
Yes.
Okay. We will pay rescue squad bills.
Just in case in the future.
We make a contribution once a year.
Okay. And also in the council comments, I brought up about the ordinance 217-2010, and there was a, it was not on the council comments. I know the mayor had made a suggestion to bring it up at this meeting on this agenda. It wasn't on that. The two corrections I have.
Okay, the one I had was on page 3, in the middle, the nomination of the deputy mayor. Attorney Cushing administered the oath of office to Deputy Mayor Jewell. I believe that's
no.
Mr. Boyle.
No. Wasn't
the oath of office to Deputy Mayor Jewell.
Yeah.
Oh, oh.
Yeah.
We got that right.
Okay.
Okay.
It's the Boyle. Boyle is the deputy mayor, not Mr. Jewell.
You sound so sad.
And it was the center.
Okay. Got you good, didn't they?
Anything else? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? We have the minutes of the executive session of December 21st.
So moved.
Second.
Any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Our correspondence?
That question for discussion now, or are we moving it?
Move to receive and file first.
Move to receive and file the budget.
Second.
Okay. Any discussion? Mrs. Lebo.
I would just to cover our butts, so to speak, I would just want to make sure that we, you know, formally do go forward with, you know, the resolution in case we have to go out for the referendum if we're going to exceed the 2%. Basically, number 2, little I, you know, so we can go forward publishing the notice. I'd like to make a motion that we do that.
How about if we do that right after we receive it?
Okay.
Any other discussion on it? All in favor of receiving file?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? Mrs. Lieber, your motion?
To move forward with publishing the notice and adopting the required resolution if we need to go out this for the referendum.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay, any discussion on that?
Yes. Do we know what date they're requiring that? Based on the numbers that you provided for the, you know, the budget introduction and passage, and they haven't given you a date. So, do we have to have a date in the resolution?
Don't know. They haven't provided that to us yet.
No, my question is, Janine wants the resolution back to go out for a referendum. Do we need to have the referendum date in the resolution?
On the local finance notice before you, there's a little footnote on the very bottom of first page.
I saw it.
That's all it is authorizing us to go forward should the need arise. That's it.
above that in the, I believe it, the first paragraph, it actually says, local finance notice will be issued concerning details on the referendum process. So in essence, it's a cart before the horse based on the state's requirements. The bottom line is if you put this out and nothing happens, nothing happens. If you don't put it out in time for that date, there is no option.
The option meaning stay within the 2% cap.
Correct. You can opt to pass this resolution and still stay within. The state's recommending all municipalities pass it in the event they actually need to follow that route.
Are we hanging our hat on the reserve for uncollected taxes, whether or not that's in or out the cap?
No, not at all. In December 21st, what I provided council was a transition plan that we sent to Trenton. With a few exceptions, and it has changed since then, that's pretty much our budget. As we work on the annual financial statement now, which should be done in the next few weeks, I'll have final numbers of what December 31st, 2010 left us with. That by default is going to change some of those numbers that I gave you on the 21st.
Patrick, I think what you're talking about is what the League of Municipalities wants a resolution to take the reserve for uncollected taxes out of the 2% cap.
It's my understanding it's passed one of the houses in Trenton. I don't remember if it was the Assembly or Senate, but it's passed one of the houses, but it's not a law yet. By the time it passes both houses, gets to the governor, I mean, we can't rest on that. If it passes and there's...
If it passed, it would have to be the Senate, because I have a letter from Assemblyman DeMeo saying that it hasn't come to a vote yet.
Okay.
Unless it's come in the last couple of days.
Be that as it may, we're not resting our municipal budget for 2011 on that resolution and the outcome of it.
If we have to go out for a referendum on it, other than, say, for the primary in May, what's that going to cost?
It's not at a primary. The state sets the dates for the referendum. Okay. They're all considered special elections at a cost of $10,000 approximately. That's what it costs to run a special election for this size community.
Yeah, a little counterintuitive, but welcome to New Jersey. Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Okay, at this point I'd like to open up the audience portion for remarks, petitions, statements, testimony from guests that is not otherwise on the agenda. Mrs. Pyle, you know the drill, I'm sure.
My name's Joyce Pyle, and I live at 80 Westerwood Street.
Thank you.
I have two questions. Have you made a decision for our recreation? Is it going to be a commission or a committee? Has it been decided?
That's going to be discussed later on the agenda.
It is going to be. I have one other question. I keep hearing about how many bank accounts we have. Someone said 53. Where are they?
53.
What bank?
Maybe you're talking about line items for the different funds we have?
We don't have 53 bank accounts.
How many do you have?
Off the top of my head, I'd be purely guessing. We don't have 53. What happened last year when the new CFO started in 2009, we began to whittle that backwards.
That's in the minutes from the reorg.
The banks are in there. I don't know off the top of my head the number of actual accounts. You can have one account at a bank or 10 at the bank.
And that doesn't mean we have an account at each of those banks. It just means they're banks that we are authorizing to do business with.
There are times where we list an official depository where we find that a bank is giving a higher interest rate, where we switch the money to that account, to that bank. That's why we list official depositories.
So we have only a few accounts.
We sell several dozen different accounts, depending on what the use is for. As a perfect example, we keep sewer in one account, we keep sewer capital, we keep current funds, we keep the various trusts separate. The more interactions you have, more financial transactions you have, you want to separate those funds.
Who's in charge of all those?
The chief financial officer.
Who is?
Natasha Turchan.
So you don't have all those accounts?
No.
I'm not saying we don't have, I'm saying I don't know off the top of my head. We have quite a bit of accounts, as every municipality does. But downstairs, we have it down to the penny, which is what is in each account.
You do?
Absolutely.
Can we provide that, how many, to Mrs. Pyle, how many accounts we really have?
Sure.
Into the council?
Sure.
Also, what is the issue about that anyway?
I just want to know.
Oh, okay.
So I can get someone, who's going to give it to me?
I can call you tomorrow. I'll email my CFO after our meeting, and I'll have it sometime tomorrow.
It has to be before noon.
I don't have the answer before noon. How about this week? Because I'll email her when I get home.
Okay.
Or first thing in the morning, and she'll be able to get me that information.
I'd like to know.
Certainly.
Thank you.
One question that started to come up before, too. Bob DeLelba, 86 West Stewart Street, Washington, New Jersey, obviously. The question was about what was brought up last time at the council meeting in terms of putting a stop and then bringing up in this session tonight for a vote whether to continue or not for that sewer. I don't have the ordinance in front of me, but you know which one I'm talking about.
1722.
Yeah, thank you.
You're welcome.
And I didn't see it on the agenda tonight.
I didn't even.
Is there a reason why it's not on the agenda? Because that was proposed last time.
Yeah, it was proposed.
On the agenda.
Correct. It was an oversight. I mean, it was stopped the day after. In fact, I confirmed that with the council member.
I sent you an email earlier today, too. I think Christine just to double check that.
It was canceled the very next morning.
Okay.
All right.
The work was stopped the very next morning.
I guess the point.
In any public meeting, on the agenda or not on the agenda, council has the right to bring up any subject matter.
Oh, okay.
The work was stopped.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. All right. So that's just a point of clarity because it was decided upon.
Yes.
I didn't see it on the agenda. First of all, I wanted to commend bringing those gentlemen in here tonight to just kind of educate us all a little bit more about the forensic audit and about their specific proposal. I think it was very commendable to just do that. I don't know who's responsible for getting them specifically in here.
Well,
it was good, and it was educational. I have a question about them, too. I know there were 9 bids that were submitted last year, and you probably recall the numbers on those bids. I know they were probably in the middle of the road somewhere. Do you remember which one of those bids they were?
Off the top of my head, I'll be honest, I don't remember.
All right.
I mean, I can...
What are you looking for, Mr. Bell? I have that thing here.
The bid for that particular company for PB.
It was a joint bid. There was 2 different firms.
PP Accounting Services in Haldelick and Morrison?
Yeah.
At the bottom, maximum amount, $225,000. Minimum amount, $95,000 for the years of 2004 through to and include 2008.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
There was also, and I think it'd probably be very helpful because we don't want to make the same mistake we're accusing ourselves or historians in the past making the mistake about single bids, is that there was also another auditing firm that you may want to explore. I know you're probably exploring several. It's just probably good financial practice to do so. But the Snyder & Company in Parsippany was another bidder that came in. They, I believe, were the lowest bids. When we left off in this process last year, the council was going to bring in the 3 lowest bidders just to hear the presentation because we really didn't know, and we wanted to know a little bit more about what they were going to do for the money they put out there. So it's probably good fiscal sense to bring in those 3 lowest bidders anyway and do some comparison in terms of what they're presenting and how they're presenting it so we can get a little bit more education. I think we're all kind of learning from it.
I think what we have to do, correct me if I'm wrong, we have to go out for new bids because those have expired.
Mm-hmm.
Well, so, I'm sorry, I don't mean to interrupt. It's not a question of them expiring. We have to go out for new bids because the requirements in that old RFP aren't going to meet the requirements in the initial question.
Do you know what specific requirements won't be met for this initial RFP?
The dates to be reviewed.
Mm-hmm.
It was a different 5-year term. And again, and I stated at the last meeting, the definition of a full forensic audit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if I recall correctly, when it went out last time, it was, like they said a little while ago, every single line item of every single account during those 5 years.
Yes.
And correct me if I'm wrong, I'm going by memory, I think the initiative question said a full forensic audit of the 5 preceding years, starting with commencing in 2011.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess the question is, what is a full forensic audit? Is it 100%? I mean, versus
and it was good. I'm sorry.
I'm just saying 100% versus a mix of something else.
Yeah, it was very interesting to hear them saying that they bid it on 100% on a one period spot there, and that what that would take. So their bid of 225 to 195 was going on probably maybe more than what we want. We don't know. But I think this is really a starting point instead of reinventing the wheel. If it's a matter of changing the dates from a period and then coming up with some definition in which the council wants to direct, mm-hmm. I think, you know, instead of having Rich go through this all again, use this as a template and work from there so we don't reinvent the wheel. It'll save a whole lot of time. But I still think it's probably a great idea where we left off to bring in the three lowest besides these people, because we really want a bang for our buck. I mean, if you determine, as being the voting council, that, hey, this company is, and quoting at this range, is satisfactory enough versus this, I mean, that's just good fiscal. Let's get more than one bid, folks. We don't want to go against this one again. So,
well, I think that's what the process will be.
But it's commendable, and I mean, and I think we'll learn every time somebody comes in and does another presentation, because we'll probably hear a little bit different slant on each one of these. At least I think so. Something else that I wanted to bring up, but thanks again. I mean, that's a start in the right direction. What I wanted to also bring up, and it was a question. One of the things that the citizens did here, because you had asked about the citizens, again and again, and I hear it, you know, from them when we meet and a number of other people on the street, is that when people that did attend the council meetings, there seemed to be fairly consistently a lack of information. That's why I commend Mr. Phelan on doing that, because we really need the info. And when the info is given to everybody here, you can make an intelligent decision. To ask you to make decisions with not having info is really a detriment to the borough. It's a detriment to you. It's an insult to the intelligence, because you're the deciding council. Where am I going with this? I'm going with it because the Faulkner Act actually forces us under that regulation to actually have full information for everybody. So I heard in the bidding process last time, in terms of specifically the rec, I've heard in the bidding process on some other things that potentially you're not getting all the applications. I think the applications, whatever they may be, need to come through the process that's set in place for it from the state. The Faulkner Act clearly states that the process should be actually, again, we're putting all the burden on one person is not fair. The process should be any voluntary application that's filled out for any position on any commission, it should be filtered through the clerk, and that's disseminated down to you so that you can make a decision on who you're going to be voting for. If you don't get that information on who those proposals are, and you may be, I don't know, I'm sitting back there, I'm not sitting by the bench, then you can't make an intelligent decision. It, one of the articles does say, 4069A-91, Municipal Council to act as a body. Administrative services to be performed through the manager, committees, or commissions. It is the intention, it's very short, so I won't bore you, it's already been long. It is an intention of this article that the Municipal Council shall act in all the matters as a body. And it is contrary to the spirit of the article for any of its members to seek individually to influence the official acts of the municipal manager or any other officer, or for the council or any of its members to direct or request the appointment of any persons or their removal from office, or interfere in any way with the performance of such officers or their duties. It's real important, I think, like you did tonight, let's get the information before the council makes the decision. It's been insinuated all last year in many, many council members that half the council knows what's going on and half the council doesn't know what's going on. That kind of stuff is politics and really stinks. And it does you a disservice, it does us a disservice. So I don't know what you're getting, okay? You've got executive sessions. You've got papers in front of you we don't have in front of us. But please, make sure you're getting all the information and to your satisfaction before we have to call on you to make a decision for the rest of the entire town, which is really not fair with half the information. That's all I wanted to throw out there.
You have,
please.
Great minds think on the same track. I have for council tonight a copy of 6991, which I'll just pass
God
out.
God bless you.
Yeah, I don't have that with me.
I have a question just speaking of
information. I think that's a very important point with respect to the management of a borough manager form of government.
Absolutely.
Which is the council, in fact, acts as a body. and should have discussions either, you know, publicly or occasionally in an executive session before they make decisions. So that's a very important point.
I agree with you. I concur with that, and I thank you for doing that.
My question is, again, communication, because I'm actually working on this code. You were talking about the Concerned Citizens Group. Are they still meeting?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Is their schedule posted anyplace?
No, because we've been meeting ad hoc fairly not
well. I think it would be a great idea if you schedule meetings to actually post them in the Borough Hall. I think it would be great to if you're going to have a meeting posted on the website.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you should actually send emails to each one of the council people to let us know when we're having it, because I would actually like to go to some of them, and I didn't even, until
great
you said
idea.
Something, I did not know that they were still meeting.
Yeah, great idea. It's been sporadic at best through the holidays,
yeah.
But great idea. I don't think we can post in the Borough Hall, though. Didn't you say that at one point?
No.
We couldn't
do
that.
On the public board.
You're not on
the,
right.
The
but
official
there's a
borough
board
for
posting stuff like
the public.
That, right?
Okay.
Yeah, I really think it would be very important to do that.
Yeah, in fact, the other thing that, and I'm glad you brought it up, John, is that what we're contemplating doing is actually bringing one of two state agencies or groups to actually continue with this education process on what the Faulkner Act is, what it details, how we're supposed to run and function underneath it in our form of government, and we're going to open that up in terms of actually a borough-wide meeting again, like we did one time before,
yeah.
Educationally. I think it'll be helpful for the council to be there, because, you guys, you're doing it, so.
It would have to be advertised.
Yeah, it definitely is. It's preliminary.
I mean, through us, as a meeting.
Okay.
Anytime you get more than three of us together.
Oh, okay. Gotcha. Thanks.
Can I just dovetail off of two of his three things, and I hate to go back to these things, but Resolution 217, at the last meeting, we did say, you know, stop the work, but there was going to be discussion at this meeting. So I know it's not on the agenda, but do we need to formally do something since, you know, it was a resolution that was passed? Do we need to take a vote again? That's where I'm confused as far as how we operate.
Well, there needs to be some clarification, because they weren't reappointed, so they couldn't do any work. You know what I mean?
At that point, yeah.
Yeah.
That was awarded in 2010.
I understand
that. They continued the same work from 2010.
Oh, okay.
They were asked to stop the work they were authorized to do in 2010 on December 22nd.
There was an email.
I understand
about
that.
The committee meeting.
No, they weren't told to stop the work until January 4th.
Right. So where are we going forward with this, I guess, is my point. Once he's appointed tonight,
that was part of the
work starting
because they
up
weren't
again, or do we need to
take
a vote?
No, we need to discuss the resolution again and I guess maybe reauthorize it or deny it.
Or deny it.
Permanently.
Right. That's my question. Yeah. So we're not done with that then?
No.
Okay. So we'll put that...
We'll put that on the agenda.
Talk about it later in the media.
Maybe we'll do that at the end of around vouchers or so.
Okay, then, and then with regards to the forensic audit, and what is our next step now? Do we want to seek a couple of the petition people that wrote the petition, like maybe two volunteers to look at the current specifications?
That's a discussion under old business as requested by Councilman
okay.
Regan, so I guess we can do it there.
So we'll do it there. Okay, that's it. Thank you.
Okay. Anyone else from the audience? Mr. Feldman.
Mr. Feldman, 19 Frostville Way. I would like to point out my appointment to the Education Committee and discuss the special meeting.
Can you go up to the microphone so she can hear you?
I would like to have my appointment to
okay.
the Education
sure,
Committee and discuss it in the executive session.
Okay. Anyone else from the audience? Hearing none, I'd accept the motion to close the audience portion.
So moved. So
second.
Moved.
Any discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions? I'd like to deviate from the agenda a little bit. We have Mr. Loker here, who is representing P&P of Washington under new business, so I'd like to move Resolution 33-2011 up just so we don't keep him here all night.
So moved.
Second.
Okay. Is there any discussion on this?
No.
Well, Mr. Higgins?
Yeah, well, we're going to discuss that's why he's here, right?
If you have questions.
you have to explain this to me. They're going to pay for it, right, Mr. Kirby?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, I'm done.
Yeah. Where's the money coming from,
I'm
right?
Done.
Mr. Torres, Mr. Jewell, anything? I thought you two might have questions, not
even
though you're
Kirby.
Okay.
Not really.
Then I'm sorry I kept you here for so long for just one question. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I'm going to abstain.
All right, thank you.
Okay, now we'll go back to the reports. Make a motion to receive as well.
Second. Okay, is there any discussion on any of the reports?
Yes. Let's see here. I don't know if this is the... I don't know if... this isn't the... This is what we got today. If I could just talk about this, what the manager sent out in the email today about... you just spoke with the Division of Local Government Services. You have a meeting next week on the 26th, and then underneath it there you talked about the specifically made statements.
Mm-hmm.
And you were going to, well, up top there, these items include our transition plan, our forensic audit, our borough pool, and the borough's P2P ordinance. And then you have it listed down here. What exactly, is there going to be any commitments made to those people when you go down there? Because, I mean, you have a couple things made there, a name, the forensic audit. And I guess they specifically mentioned these. The transition plan, the audit, the pool, and all that other stuff. And it says, we need to remove all non-essential services and cancel any expenditure that is not needed from the budget. Now, what are we going to be talking about with them down there? Are we going to be giving stuff up?
No.
Are we going to be making commitments?
No. This is a meeting, as required in the MOU, to have 4 meetings a year. They want to make sure that we're up to date on our pay-to-play ordinance, which we are.
Mm-hmm.
They asked us to bring a copy. They want to go over our transition plan, which is what I presented to council on December 21st. They know full well that the budget's a live document, and that it'll change 50 times before we adopt. As far as the forensic audit and the borough pool, those are... Those are specific items that they brought up because they have to approve the appointment of a professional firm for the forensic audit, and they have to approve the hiring of the seasonal employees for the pool. So they want more information on that. Specifically, what they asked for the audit was a copy of the initiative question and a cost estimate that was provided. So what
okay.
I sent them was a copy of the initiative question as well as the tabulation sheet from the 2010 RFPs. What questions they're going to ask me, I have no idea. Now, as far as the pool, they want more information on the pool. I provided them the revenues versus expenditures that I provided to council. I believe it was in October of last year, and they want to go over that with me before they can authorize hiring of seasonal employees.
Okay, so they can't come back and tell you that you're closing your pool.
Yes, they can. They can tell us we can't hire any employees.
They can't tell us that directly.
We sold our soul.
Any other discussion? Hearing none. All in favor?
Oh.
Aye.
Aye.
Okay, we're gonna get information as to what went on down there in that meeting, right?
I think I said that in my email. So I'll give you everyone a summary when I get back.
But, excuse me. I'm sorry. I had to step out.
Sure.
But we didn't sell our souls for real.
No.
Yeah, we did. Listen, I have another question on another report, if I can, you know, actually want to talk about the tax collector's revenue report, the CFO's report. The CFO's report I don't want to talk about. I want to talk about the tax collector's report. Let's see here. 2 questions that I had. All the way down to the bottom, inter funds from... let's see here, the municipal sewer utility, public assistance, all that other stuff. I guess that comes out to an other trust, $108,000 for the month of December, which was a grand total of $687,000 for the year. Is that
what we paid back to Interfunds last year. Is that a running total?
Yes.
For what, so out of the $1.5 million, we paid $680,000.
Correct. Now, the final number down to the penny will be reconciled in the AFS.
Okay, so we actually took care of...
We took care of about 50%, if you will, a little under 50% of the Interfunds. The biggest one is with the SOAR.
Okay, that's it.
Okay, we voted on that, didn't we?
Committee reports, before we get into Mr. Torres' resolution, especially, do we have any committee reports from any of the other ones?
Yeah, just that we weren't having the DPW garage committee anymore, but so that's
it. Okay. Oh,
there's no more DPW garage committee.
Okay, Mr. Torres.
Do you think before we get into his resolution or proposal, we should address the Recreation Committee Commission thing at this point? And I only have that on the agenda. Just, again, I just was wondering, like Mrs. Pyle, where are we, you know, where are we going? Do we want to continue as we are as a committee, or do we want to form the commission?
I'm as for the commission if it's outside the cap, which I think that was already answered.
And I believe...
So should we make a formal motion to create the commission? That requires an ordinance and all that.
Well, how about we just wait on that until after you have my presentation, because it's kind of germane to this whole...
Okay.
Yeah, and I think you were waiting on some information that you gave us, at least you gave me previously, in regards to committee, commission?
Well, what was discussed at the last, I believe it was last meeting, was whether or not the committee versus commission. I mean, there's nothing, in fact, I believe it was the attorney who made reference to, we already have a template, if you will, in mind for that. There are certain statutory requirements that I sent out, you know, you need to form it with 3, 5, 7 members. You have to, you know, there's certain statutory requirements that you must have when you form it.
Oh, okay.
Things of that nature, timeline, time frame, staggered terms, etc. But that's what the statute says. I mean, if council approves moving forward with this tonight, we can begin forming the draft ordinance for your review and consideration.
Okay.
I'll make that motion that we go to a commission versus a committee.
How about if we have Mr. Torres's comment or discussion first?
I'll withdraw that motion.
And we can go from there.
Okay, thank you. Well, basically, as I had mentioned the last time, I thought that there was needed some reorganization of our committees. And, you know, I proposed a resolution, which was here. Well, basically, I found a need for... Okay. For eyes and ears, basically, for the council. It's kind of like what Mr. DeElbo had mentioned before, that as much information as we can possibly get is more beneficial to us. We can make, of course, better decisions, okay? And that's our job, okay? So keeping that in mind, and the other big concern that I had was, you know, I've gone to some citizen, action committees, the Concerned Citizens group, and some of them were a lot of enthusiastic people there. Okay, a lot of people were concerned, and you know, it's a wonder how, when we see that there's all these vacancies on our current committees, it gets you to wonder, well, what's going on? How come, you know, there's some sort of disconnect there? Because actually, with this many people wanting to at least show a spark of enthusiasm to get involved in our government, to help us, okay, and then to have shortages on our committees, we should have people lining up to be on our committees, okay? So we need to look at that to turn it around. So my proposal takes that as a big consideration. So a lot of my proposal is trying to switch the way that we do committees so that our committees are more flexible. And I think that one big deterrent for people to signing on to any particular commitment is that they have to make a commitment, okay? It's a structured date and time. They don't want to devote a Monday night, say, or a Saturday during the day. They have family obligations, whatever. So, bearing that in mind, I thought, okay, well, you know, if they're all flexible, and it's well publicized that these are going to be like voluntary committees, where people, citizen advisory committees, where people want to help the council out, talk to people for us, get out, do some legwork that we, you know, can't get to because we're diverted possibly on other issues, this would be a gigantic help. So I don't know if...
I can find it.
You can find it. I do have it here. This is might be the original draft. Okay. Well, this was basically... Yeah, it is. Okay. I could read the resolution, but I think that we need to maybe break for executive session, so can I move to do that? Because there's some things that I think that we need to discuss in terms of the way our structure is now and where maybe it's going to go.
I don't know that we need to do that in executive.
Yeah,
okay.
You wouldn't be permitted to.
Well, then we should discuss it here. So maybe, I don't know, if we want to, you know, open that floor up.
Maybe just read aloud, since not
okay.
Everyone has that. And how many committees? Because at the last, it kind of defeats everything that I was proposing at the last council meeting. I think we're really going to get bogged down here.
Well, I think
committees
this...
And I agree that there's a need for some of them, but mm-hmm. You have 11 listed, as well as, don't forget, we still need a website chair and the deputy mayor who's on senior.
Senior,
yes. Right, so he also, so it's kind of technically the 13 then, and I just think it's, and the advisory, mm-hmm. The steering committees, you want at least 3 council members, and the other ones you want at least 2, we're going to 6.
Here's the kind of suggestion that I don't know what goes along with it. Should we put a little subcommittee up just to discuss this and make recommendations to council as to what they think, as opposed to full council discussing this potentially for an hour and a half or more?
Sounds like a good idea.
I don't think it's going to take that long.
I support that, Mayor.
Okay.
I think this is pretty monumental in what you're trying to do here. And some things that I think need a fair amount of tweaking personally.
Right,
a couple
right.
Of heads.
Yeah, I'm not against mm-hmm. everything that you've proposed here, but I think it is a monumental thing what you're...
Well, I just wanted to make...
I agree with the public's involvement, and I think that's important. I think we got to keep it simple, too, in some respects. And you have some good ideas here, you know, and again, I think if we sat down and discussed that, I think we could probably... meet a happy medium.
Okay, well, I thought that this was an opportunity to do that right now.
Yeah. It could be, but
okay.
I potentially see that that could go for a little while. And that's my only thing. I'm thinking maybe if we do it in a subcommittee, we can cut off a lot of that off. And,
yeah, that's not related to my policy.
Okay, yes. So, Mr. Torres, I would suggest that you chair the committee, if you have any problems with that. Don't have any problems with that.
Mr. Mayor, I'll volunteer to be on that committee.
Okay, Mr. Higgins. And Mrs. Gleeble?
I will too.
I do have a question, though. Has the attorney had an opportunity to review this?
Yes, and I had some discussions with the councilman about this.
This
councilman? Yes,
yes. Mm-hmm. so what we received and everything fine?
Well, I mean, it's certainly not inconsistent with this form of government.
Okay.
When do you want to meet?
Well,
does
anyone else want to be on? Oh, we can only have
We can only have
why don't the three of you get together after the meeting or tomorrow, email or something like that, and set up your meetings?
That's fine.
And we'll go from there. And, you know, I have a couple comments to make on it, which I'll just email. Yes, right.
And how about this, the remaining councilmen, if you have any suggestions or input, email me, and I'll bring it to the meeting.
That sounds good to me.
Thank
okay.
You.
All right. Yeah, any time.
Okay.
What else do we have? Okay, that takes care of committee reports. Old business. We have the forensic audit, Mr. Higgins.
Okay, well, this goes in line with, I guess, making a committee to get together and decide what it is, what areas we're going to pinpoint. And... I think that before we incur an additional expense to get a consultant, that we sit down as a committee, bring it back to the council, and, or again, the council members email the manager with their particular areas of interest. He can present that to the committee, and we could have something for the next council meeting.
David, are you looking at, like, scope of services?
Yes.
Just like we talked about here?
Yes, pinpoint your areas of interest.
Okay, and would you like to chair such subcommittee?
Why, certainly.
I kind of want to be on that.
Okay.
Mr. Julie, you'd like to be on that, and any other volunteer? Mr. Torres? Okay. I would suggest that you get with Mr. Delalba and the citizens group, you know, for their input on this also, since it was essentially them who got the commission about there.
I guess the ones that formed the petition, the ones that signed it, whatever, probably said.
Okay, anything else with that, Mr. Higgins?
And in the meantime, then, well, things that we're interested in, should we email you or the manager?
It should be, I would hope the manager would give us some, would be part of the committee that we could bounce some things off of and take that all, at the suggestion of Mr. Delalba, use the previous years as a template.
Okay. Anything else on that, Mr. Higgins?
Any other questions, Mr. Thomas?
Sure.
Does that mean that we are not going to hear any other presentations? Does that mean during that committee we can decide if we want to hear other presentations? Because I think we're going at it with very limited information. We have one person present, and now we understand the forensic audit. I think we're going to find that if we bring in somebody else, maybe at the low end of the spectrum, suggestion, that you want to hear their presentation, you know, just round us out a little bit better than just going on one bit for one definition.
Did you call any other ones to see if they were interested in presenting, or did you happen to call them and they said?
They actually reached out to us after the November election, and they said, keep us in mind should the governing body want to.
Well, maybe see what one of the other aid, if they can come to the next meeting and give a presentation.
That's just a suggestion, and I'm also happy if you want to part of that community or input or whatever.
Why are you having
someone
here?
Someone too.
I have you down here already.
You do.
Okay, so that's what we're going to do. We're going to have another firm come in and give their presentation as to what a forensic audit is. And
in the meantime, we can continue to find the
right.
Scope
sure.
as we see it.
And if you would like to recommend that firm or reach out to a couple to see who wants to come in, you know, I would certainly support that.
I would believe that should come from the manager making contact with the firm.
I can reach out. Do you have a particular firm you want me to reach out to?
Well,
I don't want to reach out to all of them and have them all say yes.
Well,
that was Snyder and a company. I don't know any of these folks. It's just there has to be a lower sitter.
I don't know.
I would say go through the list to find out who will come. Because if they're not going to get the contract, would they want to come? You know what I mean? At least this last firm reached out to you. So just take the list and go down until you get somebody to say yes.
Yes.
Okay.
Starting with the lowest bidder and working your way up.
Now go into Recreation Commission. Do you want to discuss that any more, or are we pretty much done with that one?
I don't know. Is it necessary to... Well, the councilman made the motion after me, so do we want to continue with that motion, or do we want to wait till after we determine the scope of a recreation committee from the Mr. Torres?
Well, he makes the motion that's still on the floor.
No, I withdrew it.
He withdrew it.
I do want to make the motion that we return to the recreation commission.
I'll second that.
For discussion?
No, for a formal.
To have the draft ordinance prepared.
Okay.
But we still have the discussion time?
Sure.
Yes.
We still have the ordinance on the books. Has that been dissolved?
Yes.
When the ordinance creating the rec committee was adopted, it dissolved the Recreation Commission.
The language in there can't be much different than what we're going to be looking for, could it be?
No. I'd have to pull the original Recreation Commission. I haven't looked at that in some time. The way it's going to work is what I'd recommend is if this is what council wants, a draft ordinance will be presented, tweaked, commented, etc. Then it would have to get introduced and approved. Then it has to get down to the state for approval because the state has to approve the dedication by rider to create the recreation trust account. So once it's adopted, you don't instantly have a commission. It has to get approved by the state first.
And how long would that?
And that has nothing to do with the memorandum of understanding. That's right. State law. It says that
this will definitely be outside the 2% cap. If it's a commission and not.
Well, no, no. The only. This has nothing to do with the cap.
It does commit.
No, no, no. But let me finish. It has nothing to do with the cap. Right now, you can have a committee with, you know, has no expenditures. Meaning, our committee right now is fee-based. It uses the recreation trust funds to pay for itself. The only costs associated in the current fund are salary for rec director and rec secretary. If you form a commission, if it's worded in the ordinance, you can have the commission pay for the salary for those two employees. Then it's not, has nothing to do with the cap. It just reduces the current fund. You don't have to raise current fund money to pay for the staff. This isn't a cap issue.
That was one of our original conversations that I got from you here.
Yeah, I thought it was removing the cap.
No. It's removing the money from current fund to be paid for with the trust fund. In the recreation committee trust account, I can't use recreation committee trust funds to pay for salary. I can use recreation commission trust funds to pay for salary. So by forming a commission, you take the money that you're using to pay for those employees once the positions are filled, and moving it from the current fund to the trust fund, therefore decreasing the current fund budget by that amount.
Okay, so do we know how much money is in the trust funds?
Yes, there is.
Here's what I'm trying to get at. The salaries came from the borough. Are they going to have enough money in their trust fund to run the programs and to make the payments?
The debt is from the borough. The borough assumed that debt, not.
So what I'm talking about is making the payments for the rec director and secretary.
No, I can't answer that. I don't know. Because remember, once you reform this, the rec commission then sets fees. Then
I understand that. But they can receive a donation from the borough.
Should the borough choose to, absolutely.
Okay. Well, we're paying now, what, $159,000 in front of $49,000?
2011 budget has $40,000 in it. That's it.
Oh, for salaries?
That's it.
But I'm talking about.
That's all we're giving. That's all in the 2011 budget. That's all that's there.
That's all that's there?
Absolutely.
$40,000?
Yes.
Okay.
The remainder of the money is from the trust. Picture this as if the commission is reformed, picture this as the Board of Adjustment of Planning. It's semi-autonomous.
Would they get all the money back that the borough took from them before?
No, because it's all borough money. No, it's semi autonomous.
What role does council then have when it's a commission?
None.
Zero.
Yeah, we don't sit
Zero.
On the board.
None. That's the problem.
Zero. They.
If we choose to make a donation to the rec commission, we as a council can do that. If we choose not to, they're autonomous. They set their
They set the fees based on the current ordinance.
Right.
Based on the council dictates the ordinance, the min-max, as
and
we did
it.
Last year, and they set their own fees each year. They make their own purchases. Granted, it has to be in accordance with the borough's purchasing manual, state finance laws, etc. Run their own programs. We own, currently, it's my understanding, we own all of the borough itself, owns all the land and the physical assets.
So if citizens come to council with issues with the rec commission, we can't help them at all.
Yes, we can.
I mean, ultimately, it's no different than if someone has an issue with the Board of Adjustment member or Planning Board member. Ultimately, they're appointed by the governing body. So there's going to be.
I mean, you could say it's a program out of that.
There's no direct day-to-day operational involvement by the borough council.
What is your role? Is it more flexible for you with the commission or the committee?
As the manager or as the interim rec director?
No, as the manager.
As the manager, it's six of one, half a dozen of another. I mean, my involvement is still going to be overseeing.
But with the commission, there's more flexibility in fund usage, say, for example.
Fund usage, yes.
Okay.
My involvement is going to be the same as a manager for both. Approval of the purchase requisitions to make sure they're in compliance with the local public contracts law. That's it.
I guess one other concern of where, and I'm just, they're so similar in some ways, and yet there seems to be a big difference. Like, for example, the pool.
They're like the library.
If it is a commission, then
for example,
we're
yeah.
not the borough doesn't have to pay for the pool anymore. It's in their own budget, their money. That's what unless we choose to give them a donation.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
They oversee and fund all aspects of recreation. The only thing on the borough side, and I have to check, is the language on the Green Acres loan. I believe it was the borough, correct? Yeah, so the borough's still going to assume that cost for the loan, but that loan amount is in our debt service now anyway.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the pool losing money then, or,
No, the pool could, if I'm wrong, tell me. The pool would actually be able to get money from, say, other sports groups, which...
Well, you're able to do that now, as a committee.
They're able to do that now. That's exactly my train of thought. That
okay,
whole
well.
Thing with, if softball has a lot of money,
right.
When it's a commission, they could use softball money?
Yes. Imagine one pot of money.
Okay.
Right.
Anything and everything recreation-related generated from fees goes into this pot, and how it's spent is sent to them.
And why did it become a committee after it was a commission?
Well, there's a lot of advisory going around about that.
Borough needed money.
Who knows?
Borough needed money.
Six
anyway, listen, I have a question. How long of a process are we talking about here? Because if we go to a commission, then the commission has to hire the park director, they have to hire the pool staff, and they don't need state approval.
Yes, they do.
It wouldn't turn around for the state, too.
No, you need to remember, commission or committee, you know, in this instance, the state law says the personnel officer, which is, in this case, the borough manager.
But they're not borough employees.
It says that the personnel officer has to oversee the civil service process to hire the people. So we still have to, it's still civil service employees if they're receiving a paycheck.
They can't be. They don't test for it.
No, but they're...
unclassified.
Every employee is a civil service employee, regardless if it's classified or unclassified. All right? Now, if the rec secretary and rec director are unclassified positions, but you still need to hire in accordance with the requirements of civil service. In this instance, a recreation director is considered a department head, which means the job description...
But the recreation department head, I mean the recreation director in the commission form of government answers to the commission, not the manager.
But again, that's dictated in the ordinance that council adopts.
Right, so why would we need state approval for them to, for an autonomous organization? The
why
library doesn't need permission to hire people.
Why do we need state approval to hire for seasonals who are paid with rec funds now? Because the state says you have to. Recreation Commission is not going to change anything except taking that $40,000 out of current fund and putting it in the Recreation Commission Trust. You still need state approval to hire any new employees. Now remember, that's for 2011. We've already received approval from the state to advertise for the Recreation Director.
Okay, so who's going to make that appointment then, us or the Rec Commission?
It depends on when it... Well, it wouldn't be council anyway.
Right. Well, that's
committee
what I mean.
Or commission. I mean, in the interim, when I find a viable candidate, it's going to be appointed in accordance with borough policy through my office.
Do we have a viable...
The rec director, but would the commission have input with, like, the interview process?
If it's being paid for with commission funds, absolutely. There should be no reason they should not be involved in the process,
right.
Especially since it's being paid for with commission funds. But the civil service requirements require that it go through the manager's office, because that's what civil service says. The state considers, in this instance, the borough manager chief personnel officer.
All right. Can you email me that information that says that? From the Department of Personnel through civil service.
What says that a
commission has to hire their people through the manager.
Dick, I have a question, Dick. Okay. Do you mind?
Sure.
Okay. Do we have flexibility in setting up this, in some respects, the commission form, for a recreation commission? I mean, we do have some flexibility, right?
Well, there are two...
Can we make it like an autonomous board, like Mr. Higgins is proposing?
Well, the Recreation Commission is an autonomous board. It's very similar to the Planning Board.
Okay.
Or a Board of Adjustment.
Right.
And there are two statutory mechanisms by which you can create a Board of Recreation Commissioners.
Mm-hmm.
And they have little different variations. For instance, you can provide for the ownership of land or not ownership of land. The old ordinance for the recreation commissioners in the borough did not permit them to own land, take title in their name, which I think is a wise idea. And I think we can craft some language that would follow perhaps the old recreation commission, but still try to accomplish what I think is important, to make sure that fiscal affairs rules are followed, all right? Bidding rules are followed, things like that. I'm not suggesting they weren't in the past, but I think that's very important, that the regulations that apply to good government operations...
Controls,
yeah. Exactly. So I think we could craft it that way.
Councilman Higgins' issue was personnel.
In our old code, it says to appoint such personnel as may be required to carry out the responsibilities of the Board of Recreation Commissioners. Doesn't say anything in there about anything else. And it says they have the power to fire too.
I think ultimately that's going to be a political decision, meaning that it's going to be a something that the governing body needs to make a choice about in terms of where they feel the control in that regard is. For instance, your planning board right now has, by statute, the authority to appoint the attorney, engineer, secretary, and such other staff as may be necessary, providing it's done within the budget. And you don't actually make those appointments. The boards make those appointments. However, they still have to follow whatever rules are applicable through general rules that apply to municipal operations. But I think that's a governing body determination as to what authority you choose to delegate to the commission.
Worked for 77 years.
I'm not saying yes or no. I'm just saying whatever that's one of your decision-making things that you can craft.
If we want to get out of that business, we give it all to them.
Okay, any other discussion?
Well, listen, how is that draft ordinance going to be prepared for the next meeting? I mean, there's going to be a draft ordinance prepared, correct?
We'll start working on it. I mean,
okay.
For the purpose of discussion.
I mean, all right, I would like to add then, for the purpose of discussion, that the old code be followed. With things that are in the old code.
Yeah, you know.
Granting them the authority that was there then, that worked, to go back.
Do you recall about 4 or 5 years ago, before Rich, I think it was Rich Sciola was the manager at that time. There was a lot of, and I think you were on the council at that time, Dave.
No.
There was a lot of discussion at that time about the role of the rec director. There was actually an ordinance prepared at that time. I don't think it was ever actually adopted. We could circulate that old ordinance as a template, all right, and that's only for the rec director. But it addressed issues at that time having to do with governance. In other words, was there oversight with respect to Open Public Meetings Act issues? Was there oversight with respect to fiscal affairs? Was there oversight with respect to bidding? Preservation of documents, the traditional core obligations of a municipality with respect to governance.
I understand what you're saying there, yep. Dick, but that was for the recreation director to fall under, to act as a department head. Without the commission being able to have a say in the hire or release. I would not follow that, because they're the ones who are going to have to be working with this individual. They control what goes on, but if they tell the director this is how it's going to be and this is what we want you to do, and the director says, nah, I ain't doing it, they have no recourse.
I actually think, Dave, that was proposed at a time that the commission was still in effect, because I think that was Sciola was the manager at the time, and it wasn't until the next manager came along that the rec commission was actually eliminated. But let me suggest this as a practical thing. I think I'm hearing different things here, or there may be even some ambiguity on behalf of council in terms of what is the right approach. We did, and I can't remember if we did it for the borough or we did it for another town, but I have a memo that we did a couple of years ago that compares the two statutory frameworks for the creation of a recreation commission. One is 3 members, one is, I can't remember, it's 5 or 7 members. Probably 7. And why don't I get you that memo? I'll get you a copy of that old ordinance. The existing ordinance is obviously in the ordinance book. If you want us to circulate a copy of that, we can do that. And it probably would be a good idea for council to kind of look at those try to get some kind of ideas as to what you want to craft, because you know you've got a clean slate here. You can come up with the best that you can come up with within the statutory framework and kind of think about these things and figure out what the right thing is.
Or if you use the existing ordinance,
uh-huh,
and you add some of the controls that you mentioned, because I think they are necessary, and add them into how they would be in the ordinance, and then we can look at that.
Well, then you wouldn't need a commission. It's six of one, half a dozen of the other. Who answers to who? If you're going to have a commission that is autonomous...
You don't even know what the controls are going to look like.
But listen, if you have an autonomous organization... Nobody controls the library. What I'm trying to say here is if they have to work with someone that they don't appoint, what... Yeah, guts.
No, we're not...
That's
not...
That's not what I'm saying either.
That's not real.
What I'm saying is
you have any choice.
We just
said they would be involved in the hiring process.
Yeah, and you can... That's a political decision.
They have to be.
How you craft that. But even if you choose to say the rec director is appointed by the Recreation Commission, which would be something that's permissible under the statute, you could still have language in there that would accomplish the oversight, the fiscal oversight, that kind of controls that you want to make sure you have, because you want to make sure that organization, you know, quite frankly, is following the CFO's direction with respect to fiscal affairs, with respect to how they're keeping track of their money. I mean, tonight you had auditors coming in talking about the fact that you need to have controls and you should have controls. Well, it would be, it seems to me, inconsistent with the goals of the municipality to have a situation where you wouldn't, when you're creating a new situation, take into account that very philosophy, which seems to be one that the municipality is very interested in.
Yeah, we have to get this on paper. Everything is going to be out there for review. You know, we're not going to be able to do anything here tonight. We're expressing opinion. And I agree, control.
Yeah.
We're not going to be able to go forward if we go backwards. So absolutely. Whatever those controls are, we're going to have them out there for review, and we see which ones we want to go with. But the fact of the matter is, I strongly believe that the commission is the right thing for the borough. You know, keep government out of it.
Thank you.
Amen.
Okay, do we have any other discussion? Mary, you have a... Mr. Feldman.
Point of information for Mr. Cushing. Your office wrote a memo on October 2nd of 2003.
Ah, that's probably the memo.
By Judith Copen.
Right, that's probably the memo.
Recreation Commission or Board.
Correct.
So it was October 2nd, 2003.
It's been an issue that has, I will write that down. Thanks, Rick.
Just to help you out.
Yeah, that is, you're a good man.
Good.
October
2nd, 2003.
I was not on
the table. That's the memo I'm talking about.
I know this is out of order, but I thank you for the floor for a second. I don't know if you're aware, and again, for the education of the entire council, and I don't know if you're telling me where it is, but there is a former council member going around representing himself as having the authority from the borough to go out and solicit some bids from vendors in the town for the food stand at the school. Now, you may not be aware of that, but that's something that's going on. So I don't know if there's political aspirations going on here or what. You may want to know about that, because you're just up in rec.
If you would let the manager know about that after the meeting rather than...
I just did. There's nothing else I know.
Well, I mean, given his name rather than knowing it in public, so so we can look into that.
Okay. So we have a motion to and a second to form a draft ordinance recreating the Rec Commission, as I understand it, and we want the input of the attorney for controls. Is that
Wait,
correct?
Scott, I'm sorry. I do have one other question,
okay,
if I would. In either form, what controls does the council have? Do we appoint any of these commissioners?
Yeah, you appoint.
We do, in either form?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That was it. Thank you.
Okay, so I have the motion correct?
Yes.
Yeah, Mayor... Do you actually want us or me to craft an ordinance, or do you want to first get the information so you give us a little more specific direction so we're going to know, for instance, the question of Dave raises. you know, what's the control issue? My recommendation is you get the information, you kind of digest it, and then you give us a little more direction, because otherwise, I'm going to craft an ordinance. It may appeal to Dave, but it not, may not appeal to Pat, and then it's going to have to be re-
Well, that's what we want, a draft. We're not going to vote on it at the next meeting.
No,
we want a draft. If you could do that, that would be...
I can do it. I can do it. But don't forget, I'm simply taking what I assume might be a good way to do it, and then putting it down without getting as much direction from you as might be helpful to really craft an ordinance. So, but it's up to you. I mean, I'll put something together.
Well, we could give you the input after we read your draft.
Right.
All right.
Everybody has a chance to view it and get their input.
Yeah. You're really nerfing us.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Any abstentions?
I'm plugged up before you say that.
Okay. What resolution was it that you were after, Mr. Gill? 217-2010.
Okay.
The sewer mapping.
How about if we do that right now, sure, since we're in the old business?
Okay. I just had a few concerns about it, one being the price tag, if we can try to save that money. And I had a couple of questions, because I'm not too familiar with the sewer mapping. I kind of basically know what it is and what it does. Is it necessary to do it every year? Could it be on a five-year plan? I noticed does... you know, it's a help to the sewer plant, but respect as far as reception of wastewater,
right,
where it comes from.
Yeah, we have a lot of inflow and infiltration problems.
Right.
You know, this GIS is going to map out not only where the lines are, where the manholes are, things like this. There's a cost savings down the road, type of thing, a return on investment, if you will, which I don't know that we have quantified, but it'll make life easier when the manholes are replaced. Any further INI type of issues that may come up, you know, this will be helpful for, say, it may be a cost of $14,000 now.
Right.
It may save us $5,000 down the road. It may save us $20,000 down the road. I don't know, but it also it's going to save the sewer plant money.
But what are the findings every year? Have we had a report? Anything changed in that report? I mean, I know we had a sewer committee. Should that have gone through the sewer committee prior to that being brought up and voted on, do you think? I mean, I wasn't here at the time, but I was at the meeting.
It probably wouldn't have been a bad idea.
I mean, but that may have been a good idea.
The more wastewater that goes into the sewer plant, the more chemicals that they have to use to treat it. And
the only lab
that
puts much out in the Shabbat in that river there, so I understand that. But I'm just concerned about the price tag and if we need that. And it was discussed whether it was a need or a want, and it was a want. So in my eyes, it seems like it's not that important. And if it's not that important, we can save that $15,000 and use that elsewhere, which we may need to. Might be a good step.
Yeah, I think one of the big problems we have is we don't know what the return on investment is, you know, how fast it would pay for itself.
Right. I agree.
And I wish I had that kind of information.
Yeah, I guess they have some kind of report. I'm sure they give to the manager and a report for the sewer plant, what they find every year, what they map us every year.
Well, they don't. Once you map a sewer line, it's mapped. The only thing you have to do is add on new development.
Right. And there haven't been too many subdivisions that I know of that have been added on since I've been
correct.
Playing.
There is no one single document that maps out every single piece of sewer infrastructure. It doesn't exist.
Right.
In the past, the governing body has expended funds towards INI. As recently as, I believe it was the end of 2009, beginning of 2010, the project was completed. Veolia Water had worked on some of, I think, was it 70, 60 illicit
Something like that. 20%, 25%.
Yeah, and they're slowly doing this now. But you know, the GIS was designed to actually, once it gets in place, you can track flows to see where the INI problem.
How long does the mapping take place? How long does it actually take to do that mapping?
3 or 4 days.
3 or 4 days.
Okay. 3 or 4 days to physically locate all the assets, and then several weeks thereafter to actually digitize it.
Okay. In my opinion, and I'm not speaking for council, but in my opinion, I don't think we need to spend that $15,000 right now. I think we can get away with it for a year. If we need to map it next year, we can do that. But my understanding is not too many more subdivisions that have been added. And, you know, again, as far as the wastewater concerns are down the road, what kind of return on investment we have here, I don't know. But
I have a question, though.
Limited information.
What does our engineer or our sewer department have to say about the mapping? Why is it important?
Well, anything associated with INI, inflow and infiltration, it's like chasing your tail, unfortunately, INI. There's always something that fails underground to add groundwater to come in. The purpose of this would be, again, to track all of our sewer assets and trend where the INI is actually coming in. Is it a section of town? Is it a section of bad pipe? Is it a bad manhole? That type of thing, in order to combat it proactively versus reactively.
But wasn't it all mapped?
So our sewer infrastructure is not 100% mapped. We get it when subdivisions get approved and they provide us as-built.
So,
but we don't have.
Would just be taking the piecemeal maps then that were already made and just putting.
No, what it's doing is physically walking to every asset in town using GIS equipment, geographic information system equipment, to pinpoint within 1 centimeter where the manhole is, where the sewer line runs. Mm-hmm. Where the catch basin is. So this way you can trend it backwards through where they're located.
Yeah, the sewer lines themselves are, they've been in the ground for about 90 years.
Well, the manholes
have been
quite a while as well. So.
Yeah. Yeah, outside
but there's no one document that lists all of the sewer infrastructure underground.
Right, and it's all on paper as opposed to being in a more permanent type of document.
And I think that for a sewer committee would have been helpful if that would have went through them, because they would have had that committee actually speak about that, whether it was a need, you know, or a want, depending upon what they discussed.
The sewer committee can contact the engineer and request the meeting of that. We can do that, right?
Oh, I'm sorry. You're asking me if you can contact the engineer for a sewer committee meeting?
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you could get some dates, I would appreciate it. Okay.
Well, I'll wait until you take care of number 3 or 4
that's
below.
Right. Yeah, that's
before I.
Okay. Okay. So right now that project is stopped
on hold.
Correct.
It's on hold temporarily. Would you like to make a motion to kill it permanently? Or
I think pending the sewer committee's discussion with the engineer, I would be.
Why is it temporarily suspended?
I believe that's what the motion
that's
was.
That's what the motion was.
Until there was further discussion.
Right.
What would
is it necessary to have further discussion? I mean, it was kind of presented as a. I mean,
yeah.
Let's just get over now. No
discussion.
Yeah. I have a question concerning the money. Wasn't that money was budgeted last year? Wasn't it?
Correct. That was money from the 2010 sewer account.
Right, so the money
as part
is
of
there,
Andrew's contract.
Money, okay, so the money is there. We're not going to be spending any additional money, and it's something that should have been done. So why aren't we going ahead and doing it?
Because we don't have to do it. It's a want versus a need.
Right.
And
so we can save that money somewhere else.
And that money then will
save that money.
Well, the money would have to stay sewer.
Yeah, okay, yeah, so that's my question, too. If we're considering saving that money, then what are we saving that money for, and how can we use it?
Foreseeable thing in the future.
Just because we have it don't mean we have to spend it.
Yeah.
Do we?
Yeah, but use
it there, we have to spend it.
Use it doesn't mean spend it. It could mean, do we put it into a trust account? Do we use it to pay back inner funds?
No, but supposing that there is a sewer emergency, then we could use it for that. So that it is logical to have
so
some surplus available.
So essentially put it into surplus.
So, yes, exactly. So
give back to the seniors.
I don't think you can. You can't.
If I may, sewer committee, there's only 2 council members on it now.
Yeah, who wants to be a third one?
Well, we're not deciding that yet. We're
well, I mean,
to all the committees.
Anybody
going to sit in as the third council person? That's okay.
We got it.
We got a bobblehead.
I assume that Mr. Higgins had you and Mr. Boyle that are on it?
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Well, he assumed it's you.
I assume that's who you meant by Mr. Bob.
Yeah,
Bob.
Right.
So,
it's good that you can do it.
Okay. So we're just going to leave it temporarily. Sewer committee will review, and we'll work from there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, that takes us to new business. Approval for the public release of executive session minutes from July 6th to July 18th.
So moved.
Second. Okay, is there any discussion on that? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? We have the approval of the Washington Fire Department member, Benjamin LeClaire.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion on this? Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions?
Aye.
Aye.
Resolution 10-2011, appointing a wastewater engineer, Suburban Consultant Engineers. So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion on that?
Just to be consistent, I don't believe the sewer engineer from Suburban is doing the borough just. Very disappointed with that resolution 217, our last committee meeting. We did talk about the senior discount program. He was going to get back to us, never did. So just that type of commitment to the town or the borough of Washington from Suburban Consulting Engineers, I will vote against authorizing this appointment. Thank you, Mayor.
I'll second that.
We'll make the engineer aware of your concerns.
Thank you.
Okay. Roll call, please.
Hagan?
This is to appoint. Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Torres?
No.
Jewell?
Yep.
Leva?
Abstain.
Coyle?
No.
We have Resolution 11-2011, appointing a municipal engineer, Suburban Consulting Engineers.
So moved.
There a second? Second. Is there any discussion on this one?
The amount is the same as last year, $45,000, correct?
Yes. I have a roll call, please.
Hagan?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Boyle?
No.
McDonald?
Yes.
Torres?
No.
Jewell?
Yes.
Leva?
Abstain.
Okay, how about if we do 28-2011 and 29-2011 together?
So moved.
Second. Is there any discussion on either of these? Hearing none, a roll call, please.
Hagan?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes.
Leva?
Abstain.
McDonald?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yes.
Torres?
Abstain as well.
Okay, let's go with 30, 31, and 32 together.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on any of these? Roll call on these, please.
Boyle?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
Hagan?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Torres?
Yes.
Leva?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes.
Okay, 35-2011, soil and sediment control.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, is there any discussion on this one?
If you're abstaining, can you still ask the question? I was just wondering, when it says deposited into the current fund, why isn't this from the trust escrow? Why is it current fund?
I'm sorry, you're talking about 35-2011?
Okay, hold on, I'm sorry. No.
When it was received.
I checked that before.
Was there a typo? Because I'm reading that the resolution as authorizing a refund of site plan application fee to Warren County Habitat for Humanities as 35-2011. So maybe it's a typo? Is that? Because on the agenda it says that number 11 is the resolution 35-2011 to refund soil and sediment control.
Well, it's like a dual thing. You have two things.
Okay. Oh, yeah. I see. Okay, sorry. Yeah.
Is that account number, the escrow account?
I'm looking for that page right now.
Oh, okay. Let me see that.
No, it was deposited revenue. If you look on the right, 00108 is 2010 current fund. That's what it was deposited. This was only deposited.
So when they got it, they put in current, not trust initially? Initially, why wasn't it initially
deposited? I have to look at the ordinance. The loss is actually read that ordinance. It's being returned from the account of deposit.
Well, yeah, I understand that. I'm just wondering why it wasn't current, not trust.
I have to pull the ordinance for...
If you could let me know that.
It's a planning board decision on this.
It went into the current fund because it's their application date.
Right.
Planning board decided to refund their application date.
Okay.
Thank you.
Good bet. Right there.
Any other discussion? Roll call, please.
Higgins?
Yes.
Valentine?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Flores?
Yes.
Jewell?
How about those Dean?
Weaver?
Abstain.
Coyle?
Yes. Okay, 36-2011, appointing Michael Knackbauer to the Recreation Committee.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, thank you. Any discussion?
Why aren't we holding off on this until after we get our Recreation Subcommittee's goings on?
Because they need to reorganize and still have work to do. Any other discussion?
Yeah, Mayor, the citizen involvement application, do they actually make contact with your office?
I make contact with
you. You make contact with the resident?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? And I made contact with the next one also, sir. Resolution 37-2011, Recreation Committee appointment, Maria Martinez. So moved.
Second.
Okay, any discussion on this one? Hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Any abstentions? Resolution 38-2011, Class 2 member to the Planning Board, employee member, Mike Stone, our Code Enforcement Officer.
So moved.
Is there a second?
I'll second.
Okay, any discussion? Mr. Boyle.
Thank you, Mayor. Appreciate it. If Mr. Stone sits on the board, is he being paid to sit on the board?
No.
I'm still going to be consistent. I certainly believe the manager should be a part of the planning board. So staying consistent with what I've always talked about. On a side note, with planning board on the website, there's a big typo on that for vice chair. It's spelled vice. Put an S. I'm sorry for that, but it just happened in my notes here.
Sure.
Thank you, Mayor.
Mr. Giulio?
I agree, too. I think maybe the mayor, or not the mayor, excuse me, manager, have a little more involvement as an ex-vice chair of the planning board. I think it would be important. If you make at least one or two meetings a year, I would be happy.
A little history on that, which I thought about previously, is the manager used to serve as our zoning officer also.
Okay.
And I think that had a lot to do with why the manager was, I believe, in our charter,
mm-hmm.
appointed to the planning board.
Okay.
Manager no longer serves as a zoning officer.
Okay.
Fair enough. It's just a point of information.
Mr. Mayor?
Yes, sir.
Is there any conflict of interest possible between the code enforcement officer being on the planning board, even as employee?
Well, the class is for an employee member.
Well, I understand that, but because of his particular function, I mean, I could maybe possibly see maybe an occasion where he might have to step away from something where he already decided on some building set. Okay, and he made a previous violation. So then, maybe in that particular instance, he can't even use his society.
So there could be
I'm saying it's a potential.
If he got an incident with the person previous to an application.
Which, in our small community, certainly there might be several opportunities for that.
That could happen, but I don't think it's any more pertinent than it would be for any other member who might have an issue with a particular.
But he still writes the summonses.
Yeah.
So, therefore, I see potentially this
maybe. And he would have to recuse himself from discussion.
So we would have to trust in that would happen.
There is some validity to that, but the variance of the planning board, really, in my experience, the code enforcer, there's some involvement with that, but not like the Board of Adjustments. So occasionally it might come up.
It's conceivable. It's a very interesting point, Bob. It's a good point. What I think would happen is, let's say that somebody said, gee, your swimming pool is
3 inches too big.
I'm trying to think of one, Dave, that would require a site plan as compared to a variance, a D variance. So normally, going to the planning board would be curative of issues.
Normally, right.
Normally. But you might have some issues that have disqualified something.
Yeah.
For the record, I concur with Councilman, our Deputy Mayor Boyle.
Okay, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Me.
No.
Me.
I'm sorry, one, two, three.
No.
Four. Okay. That fails. We have no member of planning board. Leader Valentine and myself. Okay, vouchers.
Well, why are we deviating from that? You want to discuss that further?
My discussion was, you know, I already said that on record.
Okay, I'll make that motion. Can we do that?
What do you want to do?
To appoint the manager as the class, whatever member.
Oh, to appoint the manager as the employee member of the planning board?
Class two member.
Okay, I would second that.
Any discussion? Let's do a roll call on that one since it was contentious on the last one.
Hagan?
Yes.
Forrest?
Yes.
Jones?
Yes.
Boyle?
Yes.
McDonald?
No.
Leva?
Abstain.
Valentine?
No.
Okay.
Can I ask why you abstain?
Because I still don't quite understand why you want the manager on it. I don't have enough information.
Okay.
Okay, vouchers.
Is that 3-4?
4-2-1.
Oh, 4-2-1.
Why do you think that?
No comments.
Vouchers. Is there a motion to pay our bills?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Okay. Mr. Julie, you wanted the question,
I have a question about one of the vouchers from page 14, the Verizon. Telephone line at the park. Is there a reason why it's $110.29? It's a lot of money for the park to be idle and for a bill to be at high.
Yes, because in 1216 the line was dead and we had to repair one.
Oh, they had to repair that work. Is there a guaranteed like plus program on that line? So
we can't get that as the government.
Yeah, okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
Any other discussion?
I have a question for you.
Mrs. Leva.
For the Comcast, for the internet service, I was just wondering, since we signed the franchise renewal, do we need to formally decide, first of all, did we receive the $25,000 grant, and do we need to formally, you know, dedicate where we want that money? Because there was some discussion as far as paying off, you know, keeping it in like a trust to pay off either telephone or internet for the next few years or whatever. So did we receive that money? And
yes, we did receive it. And how it's spent, of course, is at the discretion.
Right, so should we decide how we're going to spend that money? And where is it right now?
Right now it's in a trust account.
It is in
a dedicated account.
What's been done in the past with that?
That was done 10 years ago.
Point of information.
10 years.
When was the last?
Well, before we get into that,
okay.
we have the vouchers motion, so perhaps
okay.
We can do that right after the vouchers
sure.
have been approved.
Okay, sure. Okay.
Okay, Mr. Higgins, you had a question.
Yeah, there, on 17 different occasions here, bills go back to 3:05, the 5th of March of 2010. And they're saying that they were just received. What's amazing is they go back to the 3rd of the 5th of March, the 24th of November. Let's see here, the 5th of November.
What pages are you looking at, Mr. Higgins?
Well, almost all of them. Page 4. We'll start out with page 4 down the bottom. Frank Ryman and Son, $248. I don't believe that they held on to a bill from March to the 12th of January for $148.
No, if I may, I can answer your question very easily. Those are blanket purchase orders that are open in the beginning of the year that we draw down from. That might have been a $500 blanket purchase order opened in January, or in this case, opened in March, that we draw down from the entire 2010.
Okay, good point. So, I can't talk about that because that's has to do with pork. All right, well, auto repair.
What page?
On page 8, all the way down the bottom. 11/24/10, and they got the bill on the 12th of January.
Correct.
No, so all these bills were received on the 12th of January.
No. That's the 12th of January is when they were entered in the system to be placed on the bill list for tonight.
But the bill is dated the 24th of November.
Which PO are you looking at? What's
Petty
the vendor?
Petty Tire.
Petty Tire, yeah.
I just want to make sure I'm looking at the correct one. Yeah, no. What it is the week before a council meeting agenda, usually, you know, it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday prior to, is when all of the bills are placed on the bill list and finalized and financed. If you look at them all, they're all between January 11th, 12th, 13th. That's when the bill list is created.
I understand that. It says first encumbered and then received date. 10/27/10.
Correct. It was encumbered on the 24th of November.
Okay.
At some point in December, we probably received it, but we couldn't pay it because we shut purchasing down the end of the year. Then it gets placed on the next available bill list. We had reorg. It didn't get placed on that one. It got placed on the second one.
Okay, so back to June?
It's possible. Remember, June, it all depends on when you get the signature from them. Utility companies routinely take 3 to 4 months to sign before they get back to us. The statute says as long as you pay a 2000 bill with 2000 money, before the end of the subsequent year, it's considered a valid payment. There's no timeline for when you do it as long as you pay within the following year with the previous year's funds, assuming the money was encumbered in the first place.
We get to do that because we're the government?
We get to do that because the state financial laws allow us to do it.
Wow. Yeah. I'm going to be sarcastic here. I'm going to pay the electric company next year out of this year's paycheck.
Hey,
what do you think they're going to do?
But look at it on the other side of the coin. Remember, we have to encumber this money prior to making the purchase. So the money's there and encumbered and certified by the CFO, right? Putting it on the bill list and writing the check is the formal authorization from council to pay it. The money's already been encumbered and certified prior.
So this isn't part of the stack of bills that you found in the corner. You remember that was a comment you made, you found stuff stacked up in the corner.
Yeah, 22 months ago.
Okay.
Is that all of them, Mr. Higgins?
Yeah.
Any other discussion on the vouchers?
Oh, no, there is one other one. And that was for the sewer. The sewer billing?
Mm-hmm.
There's a bill up to the 13th.
Which,
up to the 12th.
What page?
Let me pull the sewer here.
It's on page 1 on the sewer.
Okay.
One
page,
right?
Up to the 13th?
Yeah.
Which?
12.
12/5/10 through 12/31/10?
No, it's...
There's only two bills.
5/10. Yeah, this is...
Invoice number 15603.
Personal services engineering.
Yeah, but look at the service date. 12/5/10 through 12/31/10. This is December payment for work he did in December. Services. 12/5/10 through 12/31/10.
Okay.
Yeah. There was no engineering bills paid for anything after 12/31.
Anything else? Mr. Torres.
On page 1 of the regular purchase order, Aegis Security Insurance, it's payment number 21 of how many?
Of 21.
Okay, so this is the final payment that's done?
No. We still have what's called a retainage. For any construction project, you hold 2% of the total cost after the governing body formally, after all the, this is what the DPW guards, after all the punch list items are complete, the governing body formally accepts the project via resolution, and then we hold the retainage for a period of 90 days before we release it.
Okay, so then there's one more. The retainage is the only
correct
payment.
They've been paid to date with the exception of the retainage.
Thank you.
Anything else? Roll call, please.
Higgins?
Yes, on everything, and I'm staying on anything to do with the fire department.
Valentine?
Yes.
McDonald?
Yes.
Moore?
Yes.
Gore?
Yes.
Jewell?
Yes, anything to do with fire department, I abstain.
Leva? Yes, abstain from Pinellas Consulting Engineers.
Recap, Mr. Paley.
We will move forward with the resolution and notice associated with the local finance notice relating to the 2% budget cap. I will provide the total number of bank accounts to Ms. Pyle as well as the Borough Council. The Forensic Audit Subcommittee will work with the concerned citizens as well. I'll reach out to set up a mutually available date. Dovetailing off of that, I will start at the previous request for proposals that we had, starting with the lowest bidder, working our way up, to schedule a second presentation by one of the firms. I'll work with the borough attorney on the draft for the Recreation Commission, as well as he'll provide you with a copy of his August 2nd, 2003 memo. I will contact the borough's wastewater engineer and have them reach out to the sewer committee to set up a mutually exclusive date to discuss the GIS project, and that's about it.
Takes us to council remarks. Councilman Valentine.
Yeah, I was actually wondering about something. Last session we had when we were doing the appointments, the liaison came up, this is concerning Dave, Councilman Higgins, when we were doing the appointments, you had actually had said, you know, was there anybody else that was interested? And I wasn't thinking about it, and I was just wondering if you still want to do the position. If not, I would actually like to do it, if that would be a possibility. I don't know, because I've been actually attending more of their meetings. I really do enjoy doing it, so I don't know.
Talking about the bid liaison?
Yeah, the bid liaison. So I don't know, when you put it out there, it was because you didn't want to do it anymore, or if you still want to do it. But if you would, if there's something you don't want to do, and you would consider not doing it, I would be more than glad to do it.
Can I get back to you on that?
Sure.
Thanks.
Anything else, sir?
Yeah, and the other thing is still about creating the land use board. I'm wondering, you know, are we going to actually do anything on that again? Because combining the two groups, also, I mean, we're concerned about saving money, and I know it's only a little bit, but still, it's still money that we would save, and I just want to be more effective. So I just, you know, want to put that out there. If we can actually...
Would you like that to be a discussion on the next council agenda?
Yeah.
There was another town that was in the Express Times that that recently combining to a land use board. You want to...
Is that White Township?
Look for the information.
White Township?
I think it's
really?
Yeah. I'll look. It was in this week's last week's paper. Let me see if I can find the article.
Okay. That's it. Councilman Torres.
For the very same reasons, because of the budget.
Yeah.
I just had a couple questions for the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Rich, I had asked you just to check on some safety issues at the Public Works garage. I don't know if you remember, there was that lip.
That was actually on one of the punch list items that we gave.
Okay.
We provided
it. So you worked on it. Okay, and the other was the snow money for this past snow, approximately how much?
Well, you mean how much is left in the trust?
Well, either way.
I have to check the exact dollar amount.
But
I mean, we're still...
Like last time you gave me, say, $5,000 estimate. Say,
the December 26th storm was paid with the remainder of their 2010 budget.
Mm-hmm.
So we actually still have $45,000 in the snow trust.
Okay.
Which trickled down this year, once we get the final payrolls in, I'll have a better idea. I would imagine to date in 2011, we've spent, I'd say, anywhere between $5,000 and $8,000 on snow removal already.
Okay. That's good, thanks.
Is there anything else?
Nope.
Mrs. Gleba.
Just two things. Did you ever hear anything back from the freeholder, I think it was Gardner, regarding the, you know, coming to a meeting and talking about, you know, removing the open space tax and county taxes at Councilman Boyle?
I contacted him with no response with his contact information that's on their website.
Should we reach out to him? Or?
I mean...
What about if the council would, like, send a collective email or something? Would that be something we could do?
I mean, I called and I left a message at the phone number that's on the
perhaps we should send a letter requesting that on behalf of council. I'd be happy to sign it with council's concurrence.
And then the other thing is just to go back to the Comcast trust money.
As to what to do with it.
Do we want to dedicate it to something, or just hold it in savings?
The suggestion was that we just hold on to it and use that money to pay the Comcast bill, which would give us what was it, 4 years almost worth of free internet, if you would?
No, it was going to be longer than that. Right now, we only have to pay for the internet in our building here. The library pays for their own, for the contribution they receive. In order to hook up the DPW facility to our network, there'll have to be a separate service there. So it's anywhere between 5 and 7 years, depending on the cost.
Hey, Rich, what about the fire department? They have cable, and they do have internet here, too. I don't know if it's DSL or cable, I'm not positive. I know we do have cable over there. Would that be included in that as well?
Well, internet isn't free.
Okay.
Cable's provided free for
right.
the Comcast.
You get an X amount of boxes. I spoke to the woman. I actually was on the phone with the woman that was in charge of our account. You get an X amount of boxes, I guess, and every so often you get an extra box, you have to pay for the extra box. We only allotted two, as far as I know. So I just wanted somebody to look into that and,
Maybe I'm misunderstanding.
Well, there's a commercial account that the fire department has, and
okay.
There's also a commercial account the borough has, probably.
Okay.
You're allotted so many cable boxes for cable TV, or and the internet is separate. It's completely different. But I just had a question about who they would pay for things other than the library and the borough hall.
Well, you should. You're not paying for your cable, correct? You might be paying for the box.
I have to look into it.
No. The cable's provided to all municipal buildings free of charge. Cable TV.
Okay.
Basic.
Okay.
I mean, if a municipal building, any municipally owned building, rather, should do something more than basic, you have to pay for it.
Okay.
Whether it be a digital box or et cetera.
Right. I don't think that's the case.
But no. You should. No one over there should be getting billed for it as part of the contract.
Okay. I'll get with you about that. Hmm.
Do we have any resolution on, is that a motion, Mrs. Kleva, or comments on her suggestion with Comcast?
Do
we want it to just keep it in savings, or do we don't want to dedicate it to paying off one of the bills for the next 4 years, so you don't have to worry about paying for internet, per se? You know, we'll fix an item, I don't think it would cover telephone.
What does that fall under?
What does it fall under? What do we pay? How do we pay the cable and telephone? Telecommunications.
Telecommunications.
And this would be good for, say, up to 7 years?
Oh, I mean, again, it all depends on the cost of internet.
Right.
If internet goes up, the length of time will be shorter. Right now, we're talking 5 to 7 years by paying for the municipal building and the DPW.
And our agreement with Comcast is 15, 25?
15.
15. I like the original idea the manager had about keeping those monies towards the longevity of our internet. That's my input.
We pay $7,000 a year for internet.
It's $83 a month times 12 right now. That's all we pay.
So how does that last 7 years? We got $25,000.
Well, we have the installation at the DPW.
We have to pay for install at the DPW for the internet service and everything. Again, my statement was 5 to 7 years based on current rates. If the rates go, I have no idea if the rates are going to go up. No one knows. The BPU gets a request from Comcast to increase the rates, and they dump it on every user. We have no control over that.
Is there a line item on the budget?
What,
$25,000? Internet.
It's probably under telecommunications, if I recall correctly.
Well, no, you have telephone, you have electricity.
It's under there should be one that's under telecommunications. I'd have to pull the account number. I mean, if we use this account, if I recall correctly, it's just labeled Comcast contribution, is what you see the description as.
Yeah. Well, maybe you can then just maybe get us the information, like where we would see it on the.
Well, you wouldn't.
We wouldn't see it on the budget.
You wouldn't see it on a budget. It was a contribution. It showed up.
No, I mean where we would be actually almost like pulling out money. We wouldn't have to raise that money in taxes. Is my point. Where would I see it on our?
Oh
budget?
No, I understand. If we're charging
approximately how much that would equate to this year, and then maybe we could make a motion at the next meeting.
Right.
So where is it being charged now? What the projected costs are going to be
for this year? And then,
You want to wait for that information before we make our decision?
Right, correct.
Okay, everybody okay with that?
Yeah.
Anything else, Mrs. Leva?
That's it, thanks.
Mr. Boyle.
Thank you, Mayor.
Let me have that, Justin.
All the cuts that we were doing, we are starting to feel a lot of the services and inadequacies. If you see the snow that's all around our neighborhood, but the sidewalk's not getting shoveled and cars parked there with 18 inches of snow on top like that, because we're not watching, okay? Where I'm really feeling it is that with this code book, with the codification not being put in there, I cannot figure out where we are with these ordinances. So That being said, I would like to ask about the ordinance we have, 3-20, the general powers and duties of the manager. Specifically, item number C, where it requests at least once a year, he shall make an annual report on the administration of the municipal government for the benefit of the council and the general public. I'm just curious if that ordinance is still active.
It is, and he's been following that.
All right.
I did that, it was done by end of March last year.
Okay, is it every March that we're going to do this?
There's no statutory date of when it has to be done. It
right.
took me to March of last year to compile the report to get it finalized before I presented it. I'm assuming it's going to be done in the same time frame. It's going to get done. I started working on it last year.
Okay, so I mean, so by March, May, like that, I mean?
Before that, well before May.
Okay.
I mean, I have to go back over a year's worth of notes. I write these things down as they come up,
mm-hmm.
and I, in essence, have to codify them to make sense of my notes.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Mayor.
That's it, Mr. Boyle?
Yeah.
Okay. Mr. Jewell?
I had heard a rumor about one of the DPW vehicles having a problem, I guess, during one of the one or two recent snowstorms that went apart. Was that true? That confirmed?
We had a few vehicles go down the last couple storms.
Okay. And what would it cost? Was it substantial?
One of them was a hydraulic hose, which is going to be quite expensive.
It'll probably be on the next.
We're getting prices
Okay.
And the other was a fuel tank. There was a defect in the fuel tank.
Okay. And that's going to be, is that a warrantable item? Or?
No, it's not.
Okay. Okay. That's all I have.
Okay. Mr. Higgins.
The hydraulic hose is going to get fixed. Is the fuel tank?
Yeah, we're trying to find out if it's more cost effective for us to do it on our own versus send it out to the auto dealer.
All right. Yeah, I have some things. Are we going to do a resolution in support of the New Jersey League of Municipalities requesting that the legislature take the reserve for uncollected taxes out of the cap?
We already did that. We passed it.
We did?
Yeah.
When did we do that?
Last meeting, we passed it.
We did?
Yeah.
Was I here?
It was a reorg.
Okay. I was here. Never mind. I have it written down there. Let's see here. I too want to comment on the roads. The side roads are not good. It's a whole different world up here, just 10 miles south. We're due to make a TAN payment, correct? Is that April 1st?
I don't remember if it's April 1st or May 1st, but yes, it's in the first half of the year.
Okay, are we going out for another one?
I'll know more once I get my AFS done in February.
Will that be for the next meeting?
No.
The financial statement?
It's statutory. It's not due until the end of February. I'm hoping I have some preliminary numbers by then, but I won't have the final AFS by then.
Okay, because in one of your reports it said it should be done within the week. All right, just a question. Let's see here. I would like to speak to, I know that you tried to make contact with me, John, about some kind of boat you wanted.
A what?
Some kind of boat you wanted about permission to put something in.
Right, in the messenger.
Yeah,
yes.
Whatever. Again, I just want to caution everybody, we can't vote on the internet and we can't vote over the telephone.
No, it wasn't a vote. I was just asking permission of the council to agree that if I wanted to put it. And they had a blurb in the messenger about the 101 finance thing that Tom Ferry was doing, so we can, because it's a public meeting, to let people know that it was happening. That's what that was about. It was just, I just didn't want to go ahead and put it in there. I wanted to let the council know about it and see if they were okay with it. That's what that was about.
Okay. No. But just for votes, though, on the internet.
No, there was nothing about voting in it.
I understand what you're saying now, but just so everybody knows, we've got new council people. We can't vote on the internet or...
I know that. Yeah. Okay.
Anything else, Mr. Higgins?
No, I'm sure I'm going to forget something, but that's it for now.
Okay.
But he did bring up something that I forgot to address. Thank you for bringing it up.
You're quite welcome.
I just wanted to say that I wanted to thank the council for getting back to me. I went ahead and did it because I didn't hear from you, so I assumed you had no opinion. And I figured if you did have the thing, you would let me know, so when I didn't hear from you, I figured it was okay. So I just want to thank everybody for getting back to me. And as a matter of fact, mailing it at the messenger was really happy when I actually called her and asked her to, if we could put something in, you know, putting this advertising, this meeting that we're having for the council, 101 finance. that the auditor is doing on Saturday, February 26th, from 9 to 12. And it's going to be in the Messenger. And like I said, again, she was just so happy to see that we're actually trying to do more outreach into the community to communicate. And also because there was another thing where Kay Stashen, I was talking to her, and she wanted to get more information out about paying the sewer bill. So again, I reached out to Marion over at the Messenger, and she said, sure, have her write something up for me, and I'll be more than glad to put it in the Messenger. So, you know, again, it's just getting more communication out there, letting people know what's going on. So we will be doing this, and again, public is invited, no action will be taken. It's not going to be discussing borough finances. It's going to be discussing New Jersey finance law, and it's a law that the municipalities have to adhere to, and the public is invited to observe. Okay.
John, Dave may not. Dave's point is probably a good one. Even though it's an innocent thing, we are seeking permission of the entire governing body. It really should be done in a public meeting rather than on the. And I understand it's completely innocent. It's a minor type of thing, but it really should be done.
And I only think he did that because he did ask me, and I also said that he should probably let everyone know and see if they agree with it, only because the last time there was something in the Messenger, remember the garbage and the friends that got it, there was a big thing that, you know, we didn't know that it was going into the Messenger or whatever. So that I actually advised him, saying, you know, make sure everyone knows that you want to put something in the Messenger.
It's a close call because it could be considered informational. I'm going to do this. On the other hand, if you're seeking permission, probably would be better to do it at a meeting.
And here's why I say that. At one time, there was a $238,000 bill paid by a vote over the internet with four people.
Wow. Really?
Well, I guess, again, it's two entirely different circumstances.
I understand that, but, see, that's why I won't respond to anything like that. I don't want to be involved in it.
But that's good, because then it's not a vote anymore.
Right. Okay, any other council comments? I have none. Myself, then I would accept a motion for the resolution authorizing the executive session, which will be numbered 39-2011, for purpose of personnel discussions.
So moved.
Second. Okay, any discussion?
Clarification, is it what is typed on the executive session? Oh, we have another one?
Oh.
Copy that.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
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 Any opposed? Any abstentions?
You went against me.